Hey everyone, welcome to episode 85 of Radio for Nintendo. I am your host, Jonathan Metz, and I have with me the usual crew, Greg Lay, James Jones, and John Lindemann, and we also have a special guest today, Steven Rodriguez. He is the director of our site, and he's also the proud owner of a Japanese Wii and an import copy of Super Smash Bros. Brawl, and he's going to tell us all about it. And I'm talking fast because he can't stay for too long, so we want to get as much as we can out of him before he has to go, and then we'll continue with the normal show after that.
All right,
what do you think, Steven?
You know, it's gonna live up to the hype. When I first started playing it, but when I first got the package in from Japan from James Charlton, our Japan correspondent.
What a cool guy!
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's British, also, isn't he?
Yes, he's British. Not as British as Greg, though.
No, well, I'm sorry. There's a rating for this. I was unaware.
It's a qualitative scale.
Yeah, but you know, in the days leading up to the Japanese launch, and then the time between when he sent it and I got it, it was kind of like a upward spiral of anticipation. Mm. So I went from, you know, really excited to super excited to crazy excited, and then
Megaton when, excited. When,
yeah, and when the game came and I was opening the package, all of a sudden I was almost to the point of like frothing at the mouth, just trying desperately to rip off the plastic, you know, out the plastic around the case, and just rip the game open and stick it in the Wii. I could not believe I was actually doing that, but I was doing it.
And once you stuck it in the Wii, did fluids come out of every orifice in your body, and then you fell asleep for the next 8 hours?
Yes.
Sweet.
No,
but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, but yeah, it's so much fun. It is really so much fun. It just you know, the multiplayer, it's a nice refinement over Melee. It's really a lot more stuff's going on, although it's somewhat simpler in areas. Like I said, my impressions on the site on Monday, which would be today, the day we're recording, actually. It's faster and slower at the same time, which that would sound kind of impossible, but if you just look at four people playing, it's a lot faster than it is in Melee. But if you're controlling your character, it's a lot more methodical what you have to do, so it's a lot easier to control, which kind of makes it feel like you're playing it in slow motion. You know what I'm saying?
So it's sort of more fluid, confused but more as responsive as well.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. It's just that even with the faster action, you don't feel like you're playing that much faster, I think, is probably a better way of saying it.
So it's not overwhelming for the player.
Yeah, it's not overwhelming. I mean, it's overwhelming in the fact that it's just a total fangasm, I guess you could say.
Yeah, well, they certainly intend for that, don't they?
Physically, not emotionally.
The multiplayer, there's the new stages are just so much fun. Like PictoChat and WarioWare, those are my two favorite stages so far. Even the PictoChat stage, I didn't think much of it, but it's just so simple and just this little cool things going on all over the place.
Hey, Steven, before we get too far away from this pacing issue, because this is really interesting to me, do you think because of what they've done to the pace of the game that it'll be less intimidating for new people? Because I know with Melee, I used to show it to friends all the time, and they would sit there and watch it, and they're just like, I don't even know where my character is anymore. Like, they would get so confused by the visual stimuli. And do you think there's more stuff going on in the screen?
Yes, absolutely there is. And that's actually
seems like it's going to make it more difficult for people to get into it.
That's actually a good point, because when I started playing it, I'd say the immediate first 5 or 10 matches I played in, and some of the newer stages, I was actually losing track of where I was, because it was just so, visually, there was so much going on in the foreground, and especially in the new backgrounds, especially the Pikmin stage.
Yeah, that looks really dense.
It looks amazing, like there's a soft blur background going on, but the problem with that presents is that you get the foreground and the background kind of blend. So you do get used to it after, you know, playing it for a while, and after like 3 or 4 hours I was, you know, back to my old self. But initially I was like, okay, I need to focus on my character just to, you know, understand where I am on the stage. So I doubt new players are really going to pick this up because, come on, obviously Sakurai just made this for the fans.
It's
pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing they did to make it more accessible for new players is include like Wii Remote support, which is not saying much.
No, not really. But there's no way around it, really, is there?
Yeah, it's this is a game made for us.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that the general gaming population will love it just because it is what it is. But if you get an expert and you get somebody who's new to the game, you put them in the same room, just the newbie is just going to get totally overwhelmed and there's going to be no contest. So at least for multiplayer. Single player is another story.
Well, so that's exactly what I was telling Johnny today. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so you'd say obviously it's more visually busy, but I mean, if he was going to take, say, if he was trying to introduce a new player and he said, let's go on one of the most basic stages in terms of visually, like a picture chat or a battlefield or whatever, would you just say even just the pace of the game itself rather than just the busyness would overwhelm people?
The pace, initially, yes. I mean, even for me, I've been playing Melee for, you know, since the launch, so it's like, geez, what is it now? Six years now?
Over six.
A little
so,
over.
So, you know, I'm used to it, and all you guys are going to be used to it, but even so, it took me a while to get completely acclimated to it.
Mm.
So that's where the faster thing comes in. But like I said, once I got used to it, I kind of, was getting in the zone, and I kind of felt, well, actually it's a little easier to control everything despite the pace. I think that with so many people going to be buying the game and then how many hours they'll put into it, they'll all get eventually used to it too. So as long as you get over the initial little hill, you know, once you get down and you start playing it, it's just going to be like, just like Melee. So,
controllers are you using?
GameCube.
Have you tried the others?
I have tried the Wii Remote. It's garbage.
the classic. That's what I'm really interested in.
Yeah, like, you'd think that'd be okay.
This last weekend, TYP came over. Michael Cole came over, and we played. We played the game for a long time, and he tried out the classic controller, and he told me that if you don't have a GameCube controller, using the classic controller will work just fine, especially because all the buttons are customizable. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, the GameCube controller is the way to go. It just is.
Mm. Why is that? Are you just saying that based on you prefer the mold, the way it fits in your hand?
Yeah, it's thicker, especially because even though you can totally customize everything, but just the way the buttons are laid out in the GameCube controller, everything is there. You know, the jump buttons are, you know, the bean shaped buttons on the GameCube controller. A and B are right there on your thumb. Grab is the Z button. That's there. You know, no problem to hit that. L and R for the shield. You were just used to it.
Now, what do you think they'll use in public tournaments?
You know what? I mean, I wouldn't be out of Nintendo's. Nintendo would probably just force everybody to use the Wii Remote, just because they kind of did that. They did that at E4All. They said either use the Wii Remote or the classic controller.
Wait. Most Smash Brothers tournaments though aren't run by Nintendo, so
tournament. I mean, for any game, there's kind of the de facto standard of what controller you would use.
Well,
I'm assuming for a Wii game, it wouldn't be the GameCube controller.
It will be in the private tournaments.
I would have thought so. Anybody should be able to use any controller they want to.
Yeah, and I think it'll be whatever the players prefer.
Yeah.
Like if you came from the GameCube game, you're going to use the GameCube controller.
I mean,
there's no argument there. Yeah. If you haven't played the GameCube game or you haven't played it that much and you don't have a GameCube controller, you're going to use the classic controller. It's really the best way to do it. I did use the nunchuck and remote setup a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's really weird to use the controller like that without using the pointer functions, because that's kind of what we've been used to.
Mm-hmm.
And there are actually no pointer functions in the game whatsoever. It's all just regular.
Even on the menu?
Even on the menus.
I thought surely you could just point around with a Wii Remote on
the
menus.
Nope, you gotta put
this. Oh, this game is pure. This is pure.
So you use the D-pad to move the hand around?
That's right.
That is so strange.
Well, it's only the analog stick, probably, would it?
Was he just mad at Nintendo? No, no pointer functionality.
Yeah, I know, it's weird.
It's like that in Geometry Wars Galaxies, but that is an unapologetically retro game, so it kind of makes sense. But
yeah.
And why would you use the nunchuck with that?
Exactly. I mean, it's not great. So, but this is a bit of a different matter, considering it's such a big sort of bellwether for Nintendo. I'm surprised they'd just completely issue any Wii functionality whatsoever. It's kind of,
well, they did that with Fire Emblem also.
That's kind of,
it was
shocking,
extra too. Stupid in that game.
Yeah. So hey, Wendy, what can you tell us about the single player mode?
Oh man,
have you tried it?
Yeah, actually we beat it already.
TYP and I
we both beat it. We just kind of, you know, we played multiplayer for a long time. We thought, you know, let's just go through Subspace Emissary. So I had done about the first 2 or 3 hours by myself. By the time it was all said and done, it was about 9 or 10 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, all things considered, that's pretty meaty.
Yeah.
Did you guys play the rest of it as co-op?
Yeah, we did. As we played through the game, we really saw the Sakurai influences. And it's, and I told TYP that basically I saw the game as a real Kirby game, the way it's supposed to be, just with all the Nintendo characters. And there were a lot of places around the levels and through the boss battles and stuff. It just reeked of Sakurai. Of course, it would, because, you know, he made the game.
Yeah.
So I was really excited playing through it. And the story is a really cool story, even though it was just really weird to see Nintendo characters juxtaposed. That's it.
Yeah.
Next to each other. Like, there's one scene where Pikachu and Samus are running down a corridor.
Mm.
And that was just kind of I had a short in the brain. I was like, wait, how is this possible at all?
That's the joy of Smash Brothers right there. That's what it's always been about.
And there are so many moments throughout it where you just have to suspend belief as to how any of this could be possible, even within the general Nintendo lore.
That's really cool that they've kind of recaptured that surprise of the merging of franchises, because, I mean, you know, guys like you and me, we've played all the Smash Brothers games, so we kind of got over that hump of disbelief back in, you know, 99, yeah, whenever the original N64 game came out. It's cool that they've used the single-player mode to sort of reintroduce that feeling of strangeness of combining these characters.
Well, it's true, but even then, there are a couple scenes where it's unbelievable, and I mean that in a bad way. It's just
literally
Snake.
It's kind of, it feels like, you know, a Final Fantasy game in places, which should be right because they had the guy from Final Fantasy VII help make the story for
the scenario.
Sakurai,
their biggest mistake.
So it goes from a Nintendo, game to like a Final Fantasy game at the end, quite literally.
You see Peach die, like, killed by Bowser.
Nobody dies, but they get like the bad guys. This is kind of spoilers, kind of not, but like the bad guys, you know, the general Nintendo bad guys, Ganondorf, Bowser, and DDD, and Wario, they have a gun. You've probably seen this in some videos where you shoot them and an arrow comes out and they turn into a trophy and they steal the trophy. Mm. That kind of thing is going on, and there are one or two places where it's actually kind of sinister.
You were telling me, I think, that the entire story is told without voice acting.
That's right.
Or dialogue of any kind.
It's just all the characters kind of grunting and nodding at each other, and it works pretty well. You can totally follow the story.
Silent.
Well, that should make it easy. You know, that should mean that the localization takes less time. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Well, if you were to call localization printing copies of the game, apparently, yeah, then that could take quite a while.
We should just do a podcast with grunts and nods.
Takes a month.
That disc art takes some localizing, baby.
No.
What do you, Wendy, make of the RPG elements in Subspace? Because, you know, all the stuff with stickers on the trophies.
You know, actually, I really, through the entire game, we didn't use the sticker system at all.
Nice.
Not because, you know, everything was in Japanese and we had absolutely no idea what everything said, for the most part, but we really didn't need it. We were playing through the game on normal difficulty, which is like the 3rd out of 5. And only the last boss, which is one of those bosses that are impossibly hard in a very unfair way,
right,
which will, like, kill you instantly with, you know, most of its moves.
Yeah.
Ah,
like the double hands and melee.
Oh, it's...
Like
no, it's, like, 100 times worse.
Oh, God.
But you know, we just wanted to slug it through and you know, fight it out. But we eventually, what happened was TYP was just always dying. And so how the co-op works is that in each section of the game, you have like four lives. And each life is a different character. So if you're going through a section where you have five characters, not in your party, just kind of in that sequence, you pick four of them and you play through that sequence with those characters. In co-op, you pick one character and your partner picks another character. And if one of you dies, then the next life kind of goes to that next character. It was kind of a stupid sequence at the end to where the final boss, you could choose six characters out of everybody you've found up to that point. What happened was, if we're on our like third to last life or second to last life, so it's two plus an extra life in reserve, and the co-op character dies and then the main character dies, there's an extra life in reserve that never gets used, because there's a co-op person is still alive. Doesn't matter if the main character dies and you have no lives in reserve, the game's over. So you actually have one less life to work with, sometimes two if the chips fall the wrong way in co-op.
So it actually makes it harder, possibly?
Yeah, it is. If you have two people that are equally as good, it's not going to be a problem. Ooh. But
the blame on TYP. Yeah,
this is it's supposed to be a team game.
I'm going
to
go out and say that TYP is probably better at Smash Brothers than Windy is. I've seen them both play.
Well, no.
I mean, they're both good, but TYP is like tournament quality pretty much.
Well, that's exactly the thing, because we were playing through Subspace Emissary like the multiplayer Smash Brothers, and initially it works fine because all you're doing is just going through the levels and just beating the crap out of anybody that's in your way. But later we found that doing that will just totally drain all your life, you know, get your damage up. So when you get to the hard parts, you're like out of lives and your damage is really high, so you don't really have a chance to fend for yourself. So really the best way to play through the game is just to run past everything and save your life for like the bosses.
Seems really stupid.
Wow. That sounds like awesome game design.
Yeah, well, I had concerns about whether they was really going to be able to. I mean, it's all well and good, you know, sort of having the idea of having an expansive one player experience where you get to create all these amusing little mashups and maybe some sort of epic kind of stuff for fan service. But do they really craft it so that the gameplay works for a one-player experience in a different way, or is it just kind of, you know, shoehorned in?
It's actually kind of both, because it works in the fact that, you know, side-scrolling and the fighting engine, everything translates pretty well over into the single-player mode, just kind of how like it did in the Melee single-player mode, which, you know, it was really good, but this is like, you know, another step above that.
Melee single-player mode is not really good.
Well, compared to the classic,
yeah,
but, I think it is.
Honestly, I think classic mode in Melee is better than adventure mode.
It depends. Obviously, adventure's kind of more interesting, but not necessarily exclusively in a good way.
It is the first time.
They're different. Let's say that. But the thing about it is, there are things you need to do in an adventure game that don't work very well with the Smash Brothers controls. Like, there were a lot of points, especially toward the end when things were really getting hard and hairy, that they had to, like, certain things happened within the level that were completely out of your control, and you would have plenty of opportunity to escape those things if you had very, very responsive controls. You don't really in Brawl. Like, there's this one type of enemy that's kind of a moving platform, and they kind of swoop in at the bottom of the screen and then go straight up, and they do that like right underneath you. So unless you see it coming, which is really hard to do with everything else going around you, the second that thing goes up to your feet and starts lifting you up, you're going to die because you cannot get off of it fast enough to either side.
Oh, wonderful.
So you would say
can't you smash downwards? Well, or something?
So you would say that they've sort of balanced the game, obviously for the multiplayer principally, because that is, you know, obviously the main thing that people want from the game, and then haven't necessarily designed the one player game sort of with those limitations and constraints in mind, ideally.
You know, that's probably the best way of putting it, because the controls, they all work when you're just going out and fighting everybody, but when you translate to an adventure side-scrolling gameplay, it doesn't quite work the same way. And you know, I had a lot of fun going through it. I actually still need to go through to get a couple of the hidden things that I missed the first time through, but it's a little more frustrating in places than I think it really should be.
Okay, well, I know you're running out of time, but I don't believe in Smash Brothers spoilers. I think the idea is silly in the first place. So, tons of lists of the secret characters and everything have come out. How many of the secret characters have you gotten? What characters do you like, including the new ones that aren't secret, but just Olimar and stuff like that? I mean, what do you feel about the characters, and are you disappointed with the clones and things like that?
Okay, well, so far, it's really easy to unlock characters this time because you can get just about all of them through a Subspace Emissary. So right now, let's see how many do I have. I have 32 out of the 35. And right. I think I can get, 33 by doing one other thing I need to do. But let's see. Well, my favorite character of the bunch so far is actually Pit. I really like the fact, they balanced out with those super light characters that can kind of fly all over the place and the super heavy characters. It's a really nice contrast, and I especially like Pit because he's pretty mobile, and his attacks, he's got, a rapid fire attacks and everything. Unlike Meta Knight, who I really don't like because his attacks are really, really weak and really, really fast. And he can fly around and...
Would you say Meta Knight is more like Fox?
Oh, no. He's
kind of hard to knock people off and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's easy to knock people off with Fox. He's got that killer up and A smash.
Yeah.
But, Meta Knight doesn't really have any huge, huge, huge smashes. He's more like a keep away, get your hits in, and run away kind of character. Although he can kind of dive in and charge. Pit's kind of a balance between the super weak and the medium, which is kind of what I like him for. I also like DDD, who is a fucking tank. he's a beast. I mean, he's got his big old hammer and his forward smash. He can destroy people in the 50-60 percentile range and just send them flying.
Bit of a Sakurai favoritism going on, possibly.
Yeah, I know.
Probably.
Yeah, but of course, he's really slow. So I just like picking him and kind of staying right outside the fringe of a battle that's going on and just hope somebody gets knocked into my hammer whoosh, and they're gone.
Yeah.
It's really, really fun and satisfying to, hit him with that thing.
I was wondering with the big characters because they didn't seem they seemed like the trade-off wasn't a good one in melee. That ultimately they were bigger and more powerful, but they could be hit so much more easily, and they were so much more slow that it really wasn't that beneficial. I mean, has that been addressed this time? Do you think? Because I think they did say something you could cause quicker opponents to flinch more, so that you'd be able to get more hits in if you were a super strong character. Is that kind of borne out?
Well, you can still get the regular A button attacks. You can still get your licks in pretty well, but if you really want to, send them flying, it takes time to wind up and really smack it to them. So you can still get your regular damage in at a pretty decent rate, but it's still at the end you still need to get them, out of the stage, and that's kind of where the trade-off between powerful and slow kind of kicks in.
Right.
What about the more unusual characters like Olimar and Pokemon Trainer and stuff like that?
Pokemon Trainer, I actually kind of like him for, it's cool that you have the three different Pokemon. Of the Pokemon, I think Squirtle's is the best, and then Charizard's second, Charizard.
I heard that Squirtle is faster than Sonic.
He's not faster than Sonic. He's pretty damn fast for a little guy. And he's got some pretty powerful. Yeah, and he's got some pretty powerful attacks too. What is it? Ivysaur. It's Ivysaur, right?
Bulbasaur.
Ivysaur's. I'm still trying to figure out how its moves work, or how its moves work in English. So, but the thing I like about Pokemon Trainer is every stage you pick, it's always fun to see where he stands in the background. Because he's actually running around following his Pokemon when the stage is kind of static. And on the stages that moves, the stages that move and scroll, you can see him kind of standing in the background on one scene, and as he kind of scrolls off, the next scene he's already standing there in place, so you don't actually see him move with the scenery. He just kind of pops. How does
he survive during
places.
The Norfair stage where the lava just cascades over everything?
You know, actually, I haven't played with them on that stage yet. I'll check that out.
It just sort of comes like out put... crisp and has to be put in some sort of suit for the rest of his life.
Yeah, so he can survive in space.
Quite possibly.
Hopefully.
And any comments on the whole Final Smash thing?
Oh, I love some of the Final Smashes. It's just really fun. You see, like once that Smash Ball appears, it just opens up a whole can of worms as to the strategies. Like just go after the Smash Ball, or while people are distracted going for the Smash Ball, you try to attack them. And there are some pretty clunky Smash attacks that are kind of stupid. I really don't like. Like, let's see. Luigi's smash attack is really bizarre. It's like he emits this giant bubble field, and everything inside, like, the colors invert.
Yeah, I've
and there's
seen
this
it. It's
funky
bizarre,
60s
it?
Music going on, and I have absolutely no idea what it does.
What?
But it's ridiculous.
It's definitely the most.
And he doesn't have the vacuum, right?
No, not that we saw, no. But he does have the Luigi's Mansion stage.
Well, that's something.
That's cool. Yeah. I'm shocked by the absence of the vacuum. That's one of the most surprising things, I think, of all the stuff that's been
removed. And especially since they gave Mario...
Isn't the vacuum more powerful? Isn't the vacuum more popular than Flood, really? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Probably. Because
it doesn't talk to you.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Let me think what else here. Oh, yeah. Pikmin and Olimar. He's actually a really weird character. Is that he pulls up the Pikmin and he throws it at other people. It's really easy to avoid the Pikmin from what I've seen so far, because all you really have to do is just keep punching in the air, and anytime a Pikmin hits a punch, it'll just get knocked away. So, from what I've seen, it's kind of useless, because I wouldn't see it being used as like a top tier character. We're already talking tiers, and it's only been out for like a couple of days.
But... you kind of hope it wouldn't be such a rigid tier this time.
Yeah,
that they would actually.
He's got some
work.
Pretty potent regular attacks and pretty good smash attacks, but he kind of needs to, because all of his damage from special moves completely relies on the Pikmins that he throws at people, and if they latch on to people. And all the times I've used them, I was not having much success actually landing Pikmin on people. For all the times I've thrown.
I've heard mixed reports on whether or not you can start a match as Zero Suit Samus.
I've seen the different ways to try to start as. I'm sure you can. I just haven't seen it yet.
I
think it's some kind of trick, like shrinking the carts in Super Mario Kart or something.
I heard it was something to do with R on the GameCube pad, wasn't it? On the start screen or something.
Yeah, I tried that a couple of times and it didn't work out. Maybe I just need to.
I don't know. Do you have to unlock the trick? I mean, is that what we've come to now? It's not enough that it's like a secret technique unspoken. You actually have to unlock it, and then it becomes a secret technique.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, for the characters that have two or three different forms, like, Zelda and Sheik and the Pokemon Trainer, when you select them on the character select screen, you have the option of physically clicking on either Zelda or Sheik in your little window to say who you want to start with.
Yeah, so that's explicit. Yeah,
but there's no option like that for Samus.
Yeah, kind of weird.
Well, have you actually gotten to use Zero Suit then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the time throughout a single player, and I did get a Smash Ball once or twice. I actually kind of like her. I actually like her more than regular Samus, but I've never been much of a Samus player, really. So I think she's really fast, and she's got some pretty long-ranging moves. Her projectile gun has pretty short range, but I actually like Zero Suit Samus. Plus, she's hot.
Oh, it was going there.
Have you tried online yet?
Actually, no, I haven't, because for whatever reason, I just can't seem to connect to a game. It might have something to do with, I'm here in Los Angeles and all the people with the game are over in Japan. But I can spectate matches just fine. So I really don't know what the deal is. Later this week, or as you hear this, all this week, I'm going to try to find people with the game here in America. And when Ty gets his copy, and I think Chiron said his roommate also imported the game. So we're going to have plenty of people to play it with pretty soon. and I'll let you guys know how online works.
Cool.
Well, for the matches you've been able to spectate, do they seem to be going at the same speed as regular local multiplayer? Do they seem slowed down?
No, they seem to be going at the same speed, which it's pretty impressive. But the thing about it is, I've heard people saying that, and TOAP actually suggested this, is that maybe the online matches we're spectating are like recorded in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, that would be cool.
And there's really no way of knowing unless, you know, like we're playing a game and somebody else is watching it at the same time. And I would not be totally surprised if that was true. It would totally suck, but because once Ty gets the game, one of the things I actually want to see is I want to take video of me playing the game and take video of him playing the game at the same time and see if there are any discrepancies between the two, because I don't fully trust that this game is completely online like an Xbox Live game would be.
Going back to the Nintendo's no online games.
Yeah.
It's all a charade.
Well, there's no technical reason that it can't be. I mean, the Wii has just as much bandwidth throughput as the other consoles do, so there could be a matter of decoding some of that data that's sent across the internet because the processor isn't as fast, but it really shouldn't be a big problem.
Yeah.
The question is getting it fast enough, but you know.
Yeah, I know, but I just built up the stigma that Nintendo's been so anti-online for so long that I have to totally see it myself to believe it.
This is the game that issues the pointer, so anything's possible.
Yeah.
But there's so much more going on the screen of this game than there is in most fighting games. Most fighting games don't have items flying around and hazards and all sorts of other stuff going on. So there is more data than like a King of Fighters 2 online or Street Fighter 2 online. There's more going on. So there's much more data to send.
And it has to do it just as fast, too.
Yeah.
It is going to be technically impressive, you know, but it's just I have to see it myself, really. That's all I have to say on that.
Okay, well, I guess we need to wrap it up here, but obviously your impressions are already on the site. You're probably going to do more of them.
Yeah, I'm going to have, let's see, by the time you hear this, it'll be Friday, so I'll probably have had single-player impressions and hopefully online impressions and maybe one or two other things by this podcast. Then they get the mailbag coming up this weekend for your Smash Brothers questions. Get them answered.
That's right.
Yeah, that's really
we've gotten to ask him all of our questions, but now you guys listening can ask him your questions and he'll answer them in the mailbag.
That's the
email
mailbag.
Address for that is?
What's up?
What's the email address for that?
That's just go to the mailbag form on the site. We don't have that on the email.
It's hidden.
It's
for spam reasons.
Yeah, we have plenty of
just go fill the form. You're not too good to fill out a web form.
Who says?
I say. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming, Steven. I guess you got to go to class now. But
yeah, I got to school more people in Smash Brothers Brawl. Oh.
Snap. Welcome to school. Thanks for coming on, man. And we'll probably let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with our normal new business. Then we'll plow through that. All right, we're back with our new business, and I want to start off with a couple of things. First of all, you may have noticed that John Linneman didn't say a whole lot in the previous segment when we were talking about Brawl. Why is that, John?
Because this is a heresy, and I'm sure I may go down in infamy for this opinion, but I'm just really not too hyped about Smash Brothers Brawl. I'm sorry.
I'm just really not
too hyped about it.
Do you know what the ninth circle of hell is reserved for? Traitors.
John,
yeah.
John, I want to talk to you
about Jesus Christ
as your personal savior.
Traitors. Yeah, we're going to be in there with Judas and Satan for not liking
Johnny,
this game.
Johnny, I'm throwing your pamphlet in the trash right now.
Yeah, no, tell us why, dude.
Well, you know, honestly, I kind of feel like I've heard way too much about it. And, you know, I was thinking about it today, and I think it's interesting that we talked about the forum thread. I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but the forum thread where somebody was saying that that Brawl is the Halo 3 killer, I think it was.
Yes.
And while I think that's still completely ridiculous, to me,
I think we can all agree on that.
To me, Brawl is kind of like Halo 3 is what Halo 3 is to the 360 Brawl is, in my opinion, to the Wii. What it is it's a very good game, but it's kind of like going to be like Halo 3 was sort of like Halo 2, but with a more robust, you know, set of features. Brawl is like that for me. Like, I'm just saying that Brawl, to me, is not really going to be too much of a new experience. It takes what was already there, barely changes it, puts a new coat of paint on it, adds a bunch of stuff to it, and there you go.
Do you want to make this?
I think you're right.
Yeah, but I have no problem.
That's not necessarily
that's sort of expected with a fighting game, though.
Well, yeah. That's the thing.
Halo 3 is a shooter with a story, and
yeah, I mean, I'm not. I'm comparing the concept, not really the two games.
Yeah, well, we
I mean,
this,
and
like,
the thing
the
is,
ultimate
I'm not thing. Saying that I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but I can't really anticipate it. I can't get excited
over it.
Yeah,
I can
understand
that.
Just
like,
I
mean,
like I couldn't get excited over Halo 3. I mean, I know what Halo 3 is going to be like. It's going to be Halo 2, except bigger, badder, and better.
Did you buy Halo 3?
Yeah, I have Halo 3.
Are you going to buy Brawl?
Yeah, of course I'll buy Brawl, for sure. I mean, it's a great game.
So it's not like you're a hater.
I'm not. Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely
it's all relative, but, though, isn't it? You know, when
but you are afraid of totally getting your ass kicked online by me, aren't you?
I will. Dude, I have already gotten... I remember in I think we actually played one time.
At E3, I'm sure we did.
Yeah, but see, and that's. I mean, it's interesting that Wendy was talking about how it's not really. It's a game for the hardcore, really. I mean, it's a gamer's game, and I feel like it's the kind of game. Like, I kind of lump it in with a lot of other fighting games where I don't really feel like it's worth my time to put in a whole lot of effort into getting good at it, because I just think that it would take me so long to get good at it. That it would just be a whole lot of me getting my butt kicked online by people that are already good at it, who have been playing on the GameCube for years and years. So I just feel like there's kind of like a, you know, maybe I'll play it with kind of non-gamers or people that really aren't too good at it, because I don't think I'll ever really be good at it. So it's kind of hard for me. Yeah. That's just kind of my outline of why it's kind of hard for me to get hyped up for it.
Well,
I'm like,
I
know it's going to be a great game, but...
I've played Melee probably for about 6.5 years straight, and I'm pretty sure I'm not good at it, but I've had a hell of a lot of fun out of it, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, I mean, the thing is, the online is going to introduce a new element to it, because I could judge that I'm probably not that great at it, but you know, one part of me wants to believe that I am. When it's online, that will be not an option to me, because I'll just go on and get, you know, annihilated straight away. So once again...
Yeah.
Yeah, that I won't be able to entertain that fantasy of being good at it, but at the same time, I think it's still going to be a hell of a lot of fun if you can find people to play.
So you're actually looking forward to getting rocked every time you go online?
It's not that, but it doesn't matter. See, I think Greg has a really good point here, and I think it's something that John is discounting, in that, to me, Smash Brothers, more than any other game, I can have a great time even if I'm getting my ass kicked.
Oh, sometimes
it's so much
it's just
fun
hilarious.
To play, and it creates its own humor, you know? And but, I think online is going to be, especially with friends. Now, I don't know about the random, because that's going to get really competitive, and it's going to be humiliating, like Guitar Hero 3 and whatever else.
There's no
stat Halo,
tracking.
And Halo 3, it's humiliating to get on there and play against randomly matched people, because John's right, they're probably going to be way, way, way better than you, and better than me, and better than... most people listening to this.
Yeah.
But if you're playing against friends, it's not that hardcore, and you can just have fun, and even if you don't win, I think Smash Brothers, more than any other game, is just incredibly fun, even if you're just basically playing along and you're just cannon fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, because it's so funny.
But see, here's the thing. Playing along and getting destroyed with your friends is one thing, but online, we can go back to that whole Nintendo strategy of, is this really online, or are they just lying to us again? I mean, there's going to be
But if you're playing with your friends, you're going to know.
But if you're playing random matches, you
see,
could be...
The whole thing is, Johnny, that to me, it's like, even when you're playing with your friends, there will always be that one guy. Like, I see this in Halo 3. Like, I know a guy who is just... He absolutely comes every time we play with him, and it's still fun, so I'll give you that, but every time we play with the guy, he just wipes the floor with everybody else. He'll have...
Then put him on your team.
Yeah.
play teams.
You can do that, but typically we don't.
We just don't play with him.
Deathmatch.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's a friend of mine. Of course I want to play with him, but...
Does he teabag you?
Do you really? I mean, if he's kicking your ass, do you really want to play with him?
What am I going to do? Boot him out? Come on.
Yes.
He's part of the crew, you know. You're not going to boot him out.
Tell him he's too good.
But I mean
you can play team battles in Smash Brothers, so
yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You should do that. Okay. And also, God, there's some kind of football game went on yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've heard of this.
Yeah. Yep. The Patriots got jobbed out of that one.
Jobbed. Oh, what a crock.
Is that a wrestling term?
Oh,
have you been talking to Rick Powers lately?
It's not particularly a wrestling term, but...
Put down the Kool-Aid. Put it down.
Well, I was coming from a Bills fan. It doesn't really mean much to me, Greg. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We know about getting jobbed, mate. Music City Miracle. Like Music City Crocker shit.
To everybody out there, this has already gone back and forth in an email thread earlier on today, so...
We have had some contentious-ass emails throughout the day about the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, like, on one hand, you have Johnny, who is the absolute Patriots hater, you know? And then you have...
No. I'm not a Patriots hater. I don't even follow the NFL.
No,
I'm from Alabama, okay? We don't give a shit about pro sports.
I know.
We only care about college. Yeah. But I do have some friends, and I've watched a few NFL games, because a lot of my friends out here do. And I'm like... I kind of know, you know, I know the Dolphins were awful and I know the Patriots were really good. Nice. And besides that, it was like, I don't really know who's good and who's not. But I thought, you know, I know the Patriots have been basically consistently good for like the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And generally I root against that kind of team. I'd prefer for them to get knocked off their horse.
Well, I mean,
I was definitely for the Giants.
I have issue with people that root against the Patriots as if they're trying to maintain the you know, purity of the game or something. Because who was
The purity of the game is that shit gets balanced out over time. Everything averages out.
Not in pro sports.
I think it was Greg that actually he said that the Patriots disrespect, quote unquote, disrespect.
I gave you a long list of the reasons why they do. Are you gonna make me say them on there? Or are you just gonna concede right?
Do
now?
It. We have time to kill. It's easy to edit.
Good point. You know, it's a road you don't really want to go there. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there haven't been many Super Bowl winning coaches that have actually been caught cheating before. In fact, I don't think the number would be zero. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, this year they signed every receiver under the sun on a concerted mission to take the piss out of the NFL.
Every receiver under the sun. Dude, they signed Moss. They signed
Moss,
Randy Moss.
Well, Moss, Welker, Dante Stallworth, and probably others that got cut. Yeah, and that's a lot.
The point
was this, is that for me, the whole cheating thing, I don't necessarily believe that they got a huge competitive advantage out of it from what has been demonstrated to be true, but it's the intent.
Yeah, if they're going to cheat, they might as well do it so they can win the Super Bowl.
Well, the point was...
might as well not cheat on the Jets.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the point. The fact of the matter was with this scandal that basically it had been known to have gone on at the end of last year. People in the league knew it had happened. The Patriots had, I think it was an incident with the Packers and some other stuff. And basically it was known, but, you know, it wasn't completely conclusively proven and been exposed. So coming into this year, the NFL circulated a memo to all the teams that was essentially directed at the Patriots saying, we know it's going on. Cut the shit, stop doing it, and, you know, there won't have to be any action taken. And so what does Belichick do? He does it to the Jets, who were coached by one of, you know, his former employees on the opening day of the season.
And then
he says, when they get caught, that it was a misinterpretation of the rules. Well, that's just a lie.
Misinterpretation.
He says a misinterpretation of the rules. So basically, I thought we could film them giving their signals, but apparently we can't. So, you know, honest mistake, let's move on. Wrong. You were told you couldn't do it, and then you did it. So that's just that kind of attitude that basically the league tells you something and you completely ignore it because you're the New England Patriots and you're untouchable. You could do whatever the hell you like. I don't want that team.
I think we're in rant territory.
Yeah, this is rant territory. You know, I guess that's the point where the Patriots went from like the everybody's darling team to the we hate them. They are the New York.
They were never
Yankees
everybody's
team.
Darling team.
Oh, come on, they totally were.
Well, they were in 2000.
They totally were back when they were like beating the Rams. Everybody loved them.
Yeah,
they were like,
that was like
team ball.
6 years ago. I mean, now people are like, I'm sick of them. Their coach is kind of an ass.
Man, it's the same. Like, it's the same as any other sport, man. Whenever one team gets really good. Everybody hates them. That's it.
But
everybody loves
this is my point, though. when a lot of teams get really good, they don't have a coach that's deliberately flouting the laws of the game and actually lying about how he came to do that. That's the point, you know. I don't think the Bulls were guilty of that in the NBA. I don't think the Cowboys were guilty of Jimmy Johnson or Bill Walsh. You know, Bill Walsh would not be doing that. Let's just put it
as a Redskins fan, I am legally required to say the Cowboys did any and all sorts of felonious activities I can blame on them.
Well,
yeah, but
no,
they didn't get up there and lie about why they did something, which was cheating. That's just not happened, you know.
They just poisoned the water in Landover for whatever reason they felt like doing. They didn't lie about it.
Well, what I picked up from the emails today, John, is that you were really upset about this because you felt like it was like a missed opportunity for history to be made
exactly.
by this team going 19-0.
Yeah,
and you were just really you're kind of frustrated at the people who are rooting against the Patriots because we didn't, you know, like we were basically rooting against this historical perfect season from happening.
Yes, yeah, that just. I mean, people can root however way they want, but I just would have wanted to see that done. I don't really care about the Patriots or the Giants. I don't care about either team, but I would have liked to have
But you seen... care about statistics.
Well, no, not really. I would have liked to have seen that done because I don't think you're going to see that happen again in anybody's lifetime. So that's just something that I think it's so rare a feat that I think people right now are kind of taking it for granted. I mean, just think that it had only happened once in the history of the league, and that was, what, over
well, in the history of the Super Bowl era, people went undefeated.
Well, in the history of the Super Bowl, yeah.
Super Bowl.
There's only been 42 Super Bowls.
But I mean, no one in the AFL or the NFL went undefeated either. Am I right?
I'm with you on this, though.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking like in the 30s and the 40s, the Bears went 13-0 and stuff like that. I'd actually lost in the championship game on some occasions. But yeah, the teams, I think pretty sure some the teams went 13-0 and stuff. But my point
was... Yeah, they were semi-pro.
It is such a historic achievement that I don't want someone who holds the league in contempt doing it.
Because
it's not about how good they are, it's about necessarily as it is about they hold the league and its rules in contempt as just a minor obstacle to be brushed aside in part of their quest to annihilate the rest of the competition.
Was this designed to get us listed on ESPN? Is this our purpose here?
No, but, you know, everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, well, it was one of
that. And people told us that they wanted more arguing on the show.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So you want something
well,
contentious.
Well, we argued about this all day long over the email, so I thought I had to bring it up.
Yeah.
Because I knew it
would
be funny.
I would remind those who want history, like I said, the Giants won 11 consecutive games away from home to win the Super Bowl. That's never going to happen again, ever.
And I thought, you know, my opinion was, if the Patriots win, that's still okay with me, because I don't have anything personal invested in the game, really, in the first place, but also, it'll be like, oh, cool, they went perfect. Well, that's cool. You know, like, that's interesting. But the fact is, they didn't, and, you know, I don't feel sorry for them. I mean, you know, if they were, like, the greatest game, if they were the greatest team in NFL history... And they were like this perfect team, and they were so insanely awesome, then they wouldn't have let Tom Brady get sacked 5 times.
No, exactly.
And they would have scored more than 2 touchdowns.
They got outplayed.
But they couldn't pull it off. They couldn't win the game. And if you can't win the game, you don't get that glory. And I don't shed any tears for them.
No.
They should have worked harder and won the game.
It was a fabulous game.
But I would have liked for them to have been the best NFL team ever, because that's what they would have been if they would have won that game.
But they weren't.
Now they're just, now all they are is
like that.
Now Sorry. All they are is the best team to not win a Super Bowl. That's a big difference.
So they like completely displaced the Bills throughout the 90s.
Yeah, well, you know, to be fair,
the AFC.
How would
you say they didn't, man? The Bills never went undefeated. That's my point.
No, I mean,
that's my point. It's
and
like,
also, I mean, to be fair, there's a big difference.
By the way, my friend Kevin is from Buffalo, and I asked him about the Bills one time, because when I was a kid, and again, I didn't follow NFL, I never have, but we knew, you know, we watched the Super Bowl, and we knew the Bills lost 4 Super Bowls in a row, and we used to say Bills stood for Boy, I Love Losing Super Bowls.
Yeah, that's really
And
incredible.
I asked my friend Kevin what they thought about this, because he was growing up at the same time, and, you know, that's his hometown team. And he's like, yeah, they were disappointed they never won the Super Bowl, but those players and that coach were
heroes in Buffalo.
Oh, I'm sure
and
they
even
were.
Still today, they are revered heroes.
I mean, Mark Levy was the GM recently of the team. He came back and he was very warmly received. You know, he wasn't received as a goat.
But so, like, those people aren't eternally disappointed in their team. They're proud that they went to the Super Bowl four years in a row. They won their
league.
They
love those guys because, seriously, Bills fans don't have anything else to cheer for. That's what they got to hang their hat on.
They have
those four Super Bowl losses.
Hey, Niagara Falls, man.
They have hockey.
Yes, the same.
That's true. They have hockey and they have Niagara Falls.
And they get jobs in hockey as well, apparently.
But, and I mean, hey, and
yeah,
fucking chicken wings.
In hockey, they can't win the big one. So that's just Buffalo.
They're not jobs, man. Apparently, but I would agree. Look, I mean, the fact of the matter is, as much as I love the Bills and I love them a great deal, I really can't express how much I love them. The fact of the matter is, back in the '90s, the AFC was weak. The AFC now is incredibly strong. Yeah. So the Patriots are coming out of the stronger conference, and they're going 18-0, and they blew it. They choked.
That's the thing. I don't think they choked. I don't think you can say they choked if they only lost by 3 points. Basically, they didn't.
Yeah,
choke.
I don't think they choked. They just got
out. No, but I mean, you've got to look at it at the macro level in terms of you sweep all these teams aside. You know, and you're 18-0.
Then you've got a
situation where you're playing the fifth seed from the inferior conference that hasn't won the Super Bowl since 2002.
You could the best division in football.
This loss coming because of the way they played them that last game of the year. You could kind of see this loss coming.
But to be fair, in that last game of the year, they put points on them.
Yeah.
If they put points on
them, none of the media could see it coming because everybody picked the Patriots.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Well, you know.
All right. Well. I don't want to keep this going forever because we are a video game podcast. So, John, other than getting schooled on the NFL by a British man, what have you been doing this week?
This week I actually have played a little bit of Super Mario Galaxy, and I'm enjoying that. The one comment I will make about that.
Complaints?
No, actually, I don't. I wanted to take a different tact and say what I like about it. Actually, I was just playing it, and one of the things I really like about it is that I guess it would be the texture work. I think the textures are just look. That game just looks great. It is just. I mean, more than even games on the 360 or PS3. Some of the objects in there, I just want to reach out and touch them. Like they just look like they have like real kind of weight and texture to them that I don't see that in other games. It's just pretty amazing for that to come out of a Mario game.
That's the first game that made me wish Nintendo had gone the HD route.
Yeah,
because I think with the colors in that game, if it had been in HD, it would have been just a visual orgasm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they really do have a sense of color to the art style that you don't really see in any other game. I mean, it's pretty amazing. The overall tone of the game's visuals are pretty striking.
The music is also unbelievable. Take it for granted, but sometimes you step back and you're like, "Holy crap! This sounds like it's out of a movie." You know,
it's just it really complements that feeling of just unbridled imagination.
Yep,
that's going on in that game. It's just it's so purely imaginative and unconstrained by feasibility or realism or any of this kind of stuff. It's just an explosion of creativity.
We've
nitpicked about Galaxy on the show, but I mean nothing has made an impact on me from Nintendo like this since probably the first Metroid Prime. It's so amazing.
Unconstrained is a great word to describe that game. It's just, you know, it's so fun to just drop into that game and just walk around and just do things, you know?
It really is. And I think in that sense, it's almost too bad that the ability to just kind of walk around and explore and do things is sort of limited by the structure of the game and the way it's broken into missions, and there's not really an overworld, you know? There's kind of this hub thing, but there's not much to do in it.
No, it's very sort of...
Whereas it seemed like in the castle in 64, there was kind of more stuff to do.
There were hidden levels and things, and you could explore the castle and find stuff to do.
Right. There aren't really hidden levels in Galaxy. They're like little dudes that you have to feed shit to.
It's more like it's unlockable rather than hidden, isn't it, really?
Right.
Just a matter of time.
But,
agree. I think the music in Galaxy is really special, but if you think about it, it's such a sea change, and Sunshine sort of was too. It's such a change from the way Mario music has been traditionally, because the first several games going all the way up to 64 were really heavily based on like recognizable melodies, almost like jingles, and almost every single Mario game up through 64 and including 64
if you really think about it and you kind of remember playing through the game, you'll start to hear little guitar riffs and little things that, you know, obviously that goes back to Super Mario Brothers with the Koji Kondo theme that's on everybody's cell phone now.
Crap.
But
now
if
I'm
you look at Sunshine and especially Galaxy, they've really gone away from that, and now it's very orchestrated and composed. It's more kind of a broad idea of the way the music is composed rather than these short ideas that are repeated and then tweaked and you know, brought back
in. How much of that is hardware limitations? Because remember, we talked last week about the fact the N64 had completely abysmal sound hardware, and before that, you know, it was chiptune stuff. So maybe it's just this is what they always wanted to do, but they just couldn't.
You know, I think that is part of it, and at the same time, that's unfortunate, because I kind of like the way that those old games sounded, and what I would really like is for the old-style composition, even though it may have been constrained technologically, to be just kind of updated and now done with better instruments, better recording, higher fidelity, but the same, you know, like a similar style with new music, and it's too bad that they've... It's one of those things, you know, they say that creativity is really defined and encouraged by the limits that you place on yourself or that outside forces impose on you. And people who have essentially unlimited resources and no constraints whatsoever find it very difficult to do things that are interesting in the creative space, because those boundaries are what you push up against, and that's where the creativity comes from. Once you take that away, you know, once you have a dedicated sound chip in the Wii that's actually very good, and you have a full orchestra that you're recording stuff on, there's no limit to what you can do, and that actually presents a problem creatively.
Well, what I would say, though, is I thought the more expansive feel fit well with the sort of grand celestial kind of thing that goes on in that game.
I agree with that.
You know, if it was for a different Mario game that had a different theme to it, I think it may have. I think some of the motivations for what they did with the music was certainly the settings, you know, and it's a good fit. Not only is the music, you know, sublime in itself, but I think it's very nicely sort of juxtaposed with, you know, what's actually going on in the gameplay. So a real triumph all around. They should really put that much effort in with more things.
Yeah, I mean, it really fits the whole epic.
Well, they did the same in...
Go ahead, Jimmy.
They did the same in Sunshine, too. The music was really, really driven by the themes of the game. And I thought that was one of the biggest achievements of Sunshine, was how well the music was intertwined with whatever stage you were on.
Yeah, Sunshine was interesting because they really... Because the theme was so much more specific than Galaxy. Because Galaxy's like, well, you know, it's a bunch of little planets we can put whatever the hell we like on. You know, because Sunshine was a much more unified theme of the sort of tropical island and the vacation and everything. It actually
also more limited, though.
It put a hell of a lot of constraints on the game, didn't it? You know, by contrast.
I think that's a situation where the constraints that they put on themselves for that game had a lot of potential to develop really interesting ideas, and they didn't push hard enough against those constraints, and they didn't use what, you know, to the maximum ability.
And of course,
in some ways they did use it very well.
And of course, the bits that everybody remembers from that game is the bits where they completely forgo them and just play in a crazy void.
Sort of what they did with Galaxy.
Yeah, well, Galaxy's much more like finding an excuse for why you'd be playing in a crazy void the whole time. It's the void of outer space.
I mean, there are some levels in Galaxy that literally look like they might have just taken them from Sunshine and hope we forgot that level existed.
Okay, James, tell us what you've been doing, man.
All right, so I got Zach and Wiki, which I'll talk about in a little
interesting.
Bit.
Interesting.
From a mechanical standpoint, a purely, even just scientifically observational standpoint, it is a very well put together game. All the components of the game seem perfect. And yet, for some reason, the game is driving me absolutely insane. And I think it's got more to do with not the fact that it's not a good game. And I can appreciate that it's a good game. And my brain is telling me I should be having more fun than I am. Hmm. And the only explanation I can come up with is the completely masochistic level of puzzle solving you have to do in this game. There are some puzzles where not only are you punished for getting it wrong so you can't experiment, but are so obtuse or just outright difficult that it's just plain evil. And the one that's really sticking out in my head is the boss stage of the ice levels, where you have to align these mirrors to get a light beam up to the front of the stage. And you can't experiment because after three times you die. And you not only can you not experiment, if you just say, okay, well, I'll just let myself die and I'll just keep experimenting and I'll restart. I won't waste my continues because there's nothing before that part of the mirror exchanging besides pressing a button. The stage then goes and changes on you. And it's a different layout. And there are like five different layouts. So you can't just try it over and over again until you figure it out. And in fact, the solution is kind of weird. And the hint system tells you, like, oh, use the mirrors to reflect it. Well, I already had figured that out. It took me like 2 hours to beat that damn stage. And it was only because I got lucky and got a relatively easy puzzle. Right. And then after that, there was another one. And it was like, are you kidding me? Who is this game designed for? I mean, because it feels like, in every appreciable sense, this game is designed to appeal to a wide range of audiences, especially people at a younger level. But these puzzles are so terribly hard, and in some cases obtuse, that it would literally cause a child to break their Wii controller in their TV.
Maybe that was by design. Maybe they have like a hardware marketing deal with Nintendo.
It literally feels like this game was designed with some contract in shadows driving behind to make people go completely insane.
Hard isn't a bad thing per se, but if it is, as you say, obtuse and not rather, you know, a case of the people, if they apply themselves and, you know, think sort of laterally or whatever, that they can just solve it, that's not the best way of making it hard, is it?
No, because there are some where it's like you'll get a hint and the hint's completely worthless, but you had to pay good money to get that hint.
It's not sort of Castlevania 2 level of worthless, is it?
No, it's
Graveyard Duck. Or
well, there was a really good example. You had to use an umbrella to press this button. All right, I had already figured that part out, and you use the umbrella to press the button, and it like sets the level up so you can solve the puzzle. Well, I had already done the umbrella button thing at least twice to try to solve the puzzle. And then I went and spent good money on the hint, at which point she told me, you need to find an umbrella. I'm like, well, that's just wonderful, you old bag. I've already done that. Thanks for taking my money. At which point some expletives came out, and I turned the game off and hoped that my ticket for hints would be back, and it, in fact, was not. They managed to save the game, so I could not have it again.
What a burn.
Wow. Nice. Thank you.
That's
Capcom.
Very unforgiving.
It is.
It's from
really
Capcom.
Unforgiving.
Let's not forget. This
yeah,
is
I
the
know,
people.
But
they brought us Ghouls and Ghosts, man. You know? There's
yeah,
still
I know.
Some of them
I can,
there.
I can beat Ghouls and Ghosts. I can't beat this game.
It's still bloody sadistic, isn't it?
Zack and Wiki harder than Ghouls and Ghosts.
I can beat Ghouls and Ghosts 3 times out of 6 that I play it. I can't beat this game. And in fact, there's this one stage where it's not a hard puzzle, but it comes right after a hard puzzle. And at this point, you're mentally so frayed that you're trying all these really obtuse things because you're just not thinking, hey, I bet
basic.
If I do this. It's much more like, hey, move item here, A here, press it, A, done. And you're just so frustrated.
Wow. Are you playing anything else, James?
I played Ace Combat Skies of Liberation, the first stage.
Is this Ace Combat 6?
Yes, it is. And
for 360?
Yeah. I just played the first stage, and at which point I realized I was gripping the controller so hard my knuckles were starting to hurt. And I hadn't done that in a game in so long. I didn't even realize it until I finished the stage and I released the controller a bit and my hand was hurting. I was like, oh my god.
That's immersion right there.
Yes. And
it's really beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And one thing I noticed was that, and maybe this was just by sheer coincidence, but it actually feels like some of the levels are designed, or not levels, some of the enemies are actually better than other enemies. And they're all AI, so... Because, for example, there was one situation where I was able to really bear down on an enemy plane and... He didn't put up much of a fight, but then a similar plane, the exact same model, because they go into this sort of mecha fetish where all the planes have realistic statistics for what that plane can do, I couldn't get a lock on him, and I spent a good 5 minutes hunting him down, and in fact, he ended up hitting me more than I hit him before I took him out. So it may be, or maybe just by sheer coincidence, they actually went the extra mile and tried to put in varying skills of the people of your supposed enemies. which would be a pretty impressive feat.
Yeah. Did you play Heatseeker for Wii by any chance?
No. No, I didn't. But
I was just wondering if you could compare the two, but I, you know, they're vaguely similar kind of games. I mean, they're about, you know, flying somewhat realistic fighter planes around and dogfighting, but I heard Heatseeker wasn't all that great.
Yeah, that's kind of what kept me away from it.
Yeah. Okay. So are you a fan of Ace Combat in general, or
is this
one-off for you?
This was my first experience with the franchise. I was aware of it, and I did want to try it sometime, but I actually got a chance to play the first stage. I could have played more, but didn't have time. The first stage of Ace Combat 4, and it basically sold the game to me at this point, but I haven't gone out and gotten it yet.
Well, Ace Combat is huge in Japan, right?
Yeah, I think they do,
I think so.
Yeah, I remember it was like one of the few weeks that, you know, the 360 actually sold anything in Japan.
Yeah.
And Ace Combat 6 was like right at the top of the charts.
Is it 6?
Yeah, I remember hearing
that. Oh, okay. Well, the new one. Well, the only thing I really noticed about the game that was weird is how very soap opera the game is. And I was reminded of the discussion.
Very Japanese.
Yes, I was reminded last week of the discussion of the Life Science.
Life Science Surgical,
Yeah, because they're
in my hands right now.
Yeah, because there's people coming up on the radio just rambling about stuff while I'm trying to shoot down this one fighter pilot who's been giving me a nightmare for the last 5 minutes. Like, I was thinking to myself, why can the police call into my cockpit radio to tell me people are rioting on the streets about being bombed? Is that really my concern right now? I'm trying to hunt down this damn plane for about 5 minutes. Can't you leave me alone?
You need someone to screen your calls.
Seriously. But there's like people talking, and there are people talking about when I'm firing my missiles. I'm like, don't you have something better to do? Aren't you in the middle of this fight too? Shouldn't you be shooting something down?
Cool. All right, well, I'll go next, and let me start by talking about a Wii game. I played more of No More Heroes, and I think the game sort of started out slowly for me, even though they throw you into the first ranked fight right at the beginning. It took me until like rank 7 or 8 before I really started to feel the game pulling at me when I wasn't playing it, you know? Like, I just, for a while I was sort of having to force myself to play it, and now finally I think I'm to the point where it's kind of got me in its claws, and a big part of that is that the city, Santa Destroy, that, you know, that's like the GTA open world city that you're in, it's not nearly as good as anything in the GTA games, but it is an open world. There are interesting things to do in it. You can't rile up the cops. You can't kill people, unfortunately. But there are things to explore and find secret items. And as you go get a little deeper into the game, more things open up for you to do in that world. And it becomes a little more interesting to explore and find things. And that is the kind of thing that really gets me into a game. I love to explore, and I love to find things that are worth finding, you know, something that the game rewards you for finding. And so we're finally to that point, and I'm starting to like it. The combat is still good, and the enemies are getting more difficult, actually. Even the normal enemies are starting to become somewhat of a challenge just because of how much damage they do. I'm having to play a little more strategically, and the bosses are really quite difficult. The last two bosses I've had to fight at least 3 or 4 times or more before I really kind of got the hang of what they were doing and what their patterns were and when it was okay for me to attack. And the thing is, unlike a lot of Nintendo games, it's the fight isn't automatically over as soon as you figure out the pattern. You still have to use your skill and pull it off, and the fights are long enough that you have to have some endurance, you know, you have to be patient with things. You have to wait for your window to jump in there and get your licks in. So those boss battles are pretty interesting, you know. They have patterns for sure, but they have so many attacks that it's difficult to predict which attack they're going to use unless you've really been, you know, unless you've been trying for an hour and you've kind of seen it all. I definitely am starting to really like the game quite a bit. So there's that, and played a little bit of Scourge. Not a lot. It was kind of just in a minute off in between things. I did not play very much Magic Online this week. Oh, you guys will be glad to hear that.
It's still
a little bit.
Wizard of the Coast himself. Funds, right? You know.
So what?
He's still accumulating funds with which to buy extra digital cards.
Actually, yes. I have an eBay auction right now
No,
it's true. I'm selling my old paper cards because they're not really useful to me anymore. I don't really know many people locally who play the game. I don't really want to play with the paper cards anymore. So I figure, and this was my strategy for controlling the spending on the digital cards, is that I'll only spend money that I make from selling my old paper cards.
It's kind of like,
so
there's like, the
gold, there's a finite limit on what I'll spend.
It's kind of like the gold standard. What? It's kind of like the gold standard. This, you're only going to buy cards that are backed by cards.
Exactly. Cards backed by cards.
There you go.
So
very sound monetary. Ron Paul would approve, I'm sure.
Geez. Yeah, that may be the only thing I have in common with Ron Paul. So anyway, I've got an eBay auction right now. If anybody's interested, maybe I'll put a link in the article to it. It's up to like $15.
You better not.
Of course, I'm saying, hey man, I'm trying to make that skrilla skrilla dollar bills, y'all. I mean, I got to pay for this habit, yo.
I wonder how much it's going to take to bribe Ty to change your title under your icon.
Bribe him? Oh. I mean, you'd probably just have to get him to actually listen to the podcast, and he would do it. So, anyway, I haven't played that a whole lot, but, if all things go well with the auction, maybe I'll be playing more this week. Let's see, I started a new book. I finished up Stephen Colbert's book, I Am America and So Can You, which took me a long time. Even though it's funny, it's still nonfiction, and I read nonfiction at a snail's pace. I just, without that narrative line going through it, it's really hard for me to like get addicted to it, and so I end up just kind of reading it bit by bit every single day, and it just took forever to get through it. But I finally finished that, and now I'm starting Snow Crash. Have any of you guys ever read this?
No.
Snow Crash. I had not heard of it, but a friend gave it to me. I borrow most of my books. I rarely buy them because there's a place called the library where you can get them for free.
What
are you talking
so,
about?
So. Not my thing. It's kind of crazy to spend a lot of money
to do something
on books.
Like this one day.
Yeah, really. It's like the Napster of books. I'm surprised it's not on as well.
Lars Ulrich would be appalled.
Yeah, really. Snow Crash apparently is like one of the first cyberpunk novels from the early 90s. So this is sort of, from what my friend told me, this is sort of the genesis of things like Shadowrun and The Matrix and stuff like that, that are, kind of like this post-industrial or post-apocalyptic world where you have hackers and a lot of Asian influences, typically samurai swords and things like that, and that's all definitely all in this novel. And I won't get too deep into it. I'm really very early in the book, but it starts off with you meeting this character. His name is Hiro Protagonist, but Hiro is spelled H-I-R-O, and he's a futuristic pizza delivery man.
Oh God!
And
it's
if
Travis
he doesn't
touchdown.
Get your pizza to you in less than 30 minutes, then you can legally shoot him.
Wow!
And then file a class action lawsuit against the pizza company, and the CEO of the pizza company, who's also like the head of the mafia, will come to your house and beg at your feet for forgiveness and send you on a free vacation.
Wow.
And if you choose not to kill the pizza guy, the CEO probably will.
Good Lord. Who knew the apocalypse would do so much for consumer advocacy groups?
Yeah. It's funny stuff. Actually, some of the culture of it, I used to read comic books when I was a teenager. I haven't read one in a long time, but when I was a kid, one of my favorites was Spider-Man 2099.
Never read it.
And it was like at the time it was 100 years
there
in
was
the future.
A whole line
it's less
of them,
than
wasn't
that
there?
Now
like Marvel like everybody 2099 right like...
Yeah, but they all sucked except Spider-Man. Oh, okay. Spider-Man was totally cool. Trust me, the rest of them were really bad, but Spider-Man was very cool. And it's in the future, and basically America's run by corporations.
That's
and they're
proposition.
Almost like they have their own police forces and stuff like that, and there's
oh,
there's
Las
a lot
Vegas.
Of that in this, and this came earlier, so I'm sure this kind of inspired some of the elements in there. Anyway, it's a cool book, and I figured it'd be cool to talk about a book on the show.
Yeah. Oh, let's see.
All right, Greg, why don't you wrap up new business
for
us?
Oh, why don't I? I have been playing, for review, Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games for DS.
Goo!
what was
and,
that?
that was the Adam Sandler chasing after the penguin thing.
Oh, dear.
It's from Billy Madison.
And it's about what you'd expect, really. There's a few
terrible.
Sort of pretty well implemented things in there, some decent touchscreen functionality, but it is ultimately still analogous to the button mashing games of, you know, sort of athletics based sort of mini game collection.
So it's like every Olympic game ever.
Yeah, it's not essentially. I mean, what they try and do is, because the DS has these, you know, various different input mechanisms, they just try and create more change ups with how you control. So it's not all, you know, some are touchscreen. Some are purely just rubbing across the touchscreen, which is kind of, you know, your basic analogy to button mashing to run. But some are more like, you know, you swipe in certain directions to throw at a certain angle or jump at a certain angle. You do little sort of Simon Says routines with like tapping on places to perform gymnastics. And then they do have some events which are controlled with the buttons. So in some ways, it's a good idea that, you know, you've got a system that has multiple input mechanisms, and where a lot of these games are fundamentally similar in that they rely on your ability to have good timing and just, you know, then just be rampant with mashing the buttons or whatever else. You actually have different input mechanisms to mix it up a bit, because otherwise you have all these different, you know, I think it's 24 different events, but is the gameplay that different if you're just mashing buttons the whole time? Not really.
Yeah.
But of course, the gameplay.
Are there any sports in there that surprise you that they include?
Well, one of the most bizarre. There's two bizarre inclusions in the dream event categories.
Dream?
Which are the basically where the dream events are the ones that have the Mario veneer. So special moves, power ups, you know, red shells, green shells, whatever. They add some of this stuff in. One of them is canoeing. And somehow they've managed to take.
Is that a real Olympic event?
They've managed to take the noble enterprise of canoeing, and turn it into noble basic enterprise. Mario Kart battle mode, but crap. And absolutely,
it's like Hiawatha gets violent.
It's very odd indeed. It is just you paddle in a canoe, which completely counterintuitively you do by stroking up and down on the touchscreen, not left and right. And you collect coins, basically, and you can collect power-ups, and if you shoot people, it takes coins away and gives them to you. So it's very much like, you know, one of the Mario Kart battle games in Double Dash, but just rubbish. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it's extremely tenuously linked to the Olympics by canoeing. I mean, that was bizarre. And then another one.
Do you affect? Wait. Do you change how you steer the canoe by which side of the screen that you?
No,
run up
and
down?
You change that,
because that would be actually pretty similar to the way you actually sail a canoe.
Yeah, well, that was my point. That in fact, you don't go left to right; you go up and down. It's
But if you did up and down, but it kind of mattered which side of the screen you did that on.
It doesn't matter which side or anything. It's just a completely mechanical movement, and all it does is affect your speed. You steer with left and right on the D-pad.
Oh, come on! What a missed opportunity.
Are there any games exactly. that use the microphone?
It's and the ones that are a mixture of that, where you're holding the D-pad and the buttons, and you're doing something with the touchscreen, they don't really work that well. They're a bit clumsy most of the time. They're not particularly good, though. Again, I think they're trying to add some variety, or at least add the appearance of variety with some of these more different control schemes, and some of them really don't work as a result, and that would be one of them. But another one that I thought was really bizarre was boxing, because the way they handle boxing is that in the top screen, you've basically got a first-person view, so you're looking right at your opponent, and you are punching them in the face. And you know, it's kind of interesting with these cutesy little characters. Quite heartbreaking if you're attached to them in any way. But you're just
and
wailing.
And there's a large community that is very attached to them.
First person perspective, wailing on people, and you know, in some cases, it's misogyny. You know, so that...
yeah. So you can't fight Amy. Right?
Exactly. This is the guilt.
Because she has it coming.
But then on the other hand,
beat the ever loving shit out of Amy Rose.
That bitch needs to get hurt.
If you really are one of these people that can't abide by how much of a rotter Bowser is, then maybe you find it a sort of cathartic experience or something. But
I'd much rather hit Bowser Jr.
He's not in the game, sadly, to answer for his crimes against fans. But that one I thought was kind of interesting, because it just kind of runs. It's so kind of in your face, like, that you're really bashing them. You know, because Smash Brothers is all very detached.
Do they get bruises and
stuff? No. The DS can't handle that, and I'm sure they wouldn't allow it. But
yeah, it can.
Well, the DS user base can't handle it. It's too shocking. It's too graphic. Yeah.
physical assault.
Have you played anything good this week?
No,
Greg?
Well, I was doing that all week for review, pretty much. I've still been getting some Geometry Wars in here and there. Not as much as I'd like.
That's good.
That
game's easy to get in here.
Exactly.
And there,
that's what's great about that. That's one of the reasons behind the purchase. It's just you can sort of sneak it in the sessions here and there, and that's what I've been doing other than Mario and Sonic, which. It was very much what I expected with some failures, and the biggest failure I would quickly like to mention is with this kind of game, multiplayer is really where you're going to get any kind of significant enjoyment out of the game, and they do something very stupid in my opinion, which is when you're playing on with people. First of all, the single card options are crap. There's like six events. It's such a poor selection. You may as well not have it. But the second part is that when you're playing against people. You actually play the events simultaneously. So say, for instance, if you're both trying to do a javelin throw or a hammer throw or whatever, you'll just be throwing simultaneously and you won't really know what your opponent's been doing until it's all over. So you just do it. You do it at the same time with your friend next to you and then it's over and it's, oh, I won. And that doesn't really work. I mean, the only thing that kind of makes it interesting is when you're watching the other person do it and there's that pressure of like, okay, you know I've set this score and you know you have to beat that score and everyone's kind of, you know, focused on you and you know, it's kind of some element of tension or whatever. But when it's just like, you may as well be playing one player and then just say, compare scores at the end and say, oh, I would have beaten you. I mean, it really is that pointless.
Ubisoft made that exact same dumb decision in Raving Rabbids. You know, all the multiplayer was, I'll do it, then you do it. I'm surprised that another game repeated that because Ubisoft really got taken to task for that in a lot of reviews.
I just thought, you know...
Greg is saying that he would prefer that it was turned
Yeah, out. Or at least there was the option for... Because the point is that these kinds of things... It's fairly uninteresting, you know, it's not obviously because of the nature of the Olympics, it's not head-to-head, you know, unless it's boxing, you know, or some of these other bizarre events that they've put in there, you know, it's just, right...
the races kind of are.
Yeah, the races kind of are, but you're so busy just frantically scratching the hell out of your touchscreen, you can't really see what's going on, you know, instead of being in front of a television, you know, you're holding the screen in your hands while doing terrible things to it with a stylus... You're not really concentrating. You're just concentrating on, I'll rub as hard as I can and I'll see where I finish. Unless it's something like hurdles where you actually have to take into account the hurdles.
Is this game going to be like to your DS screen what the original Mario Party was to Palms? Is it just going to destroy your screen?
I mean, I actually played it mostly on my old DS Fat because I didn't want to do that.
Good choice.
I didn't want to do that to my DS Lite, which is fairly new.
Preventative measures. Okay, that's enough about the damn Olympics. So we're going to take a break and we'll come back with community... I want to say community service. Maybe it is that. Maybe I'm doing penance for some crime. Okay, so we'll be back in a minute.
Hey there, folks. Carl Castagnetti here. I know I promised a farewell episode, and I'm happy to say that Mike, Evan, and I indeed did record an epic show to say goodbye with. But thanks to those classic technical difficulties, they were lost to the void. So, instead of recording again, I figured I'd say goodbye through a review. And what else could it be but my favorite talking point, Super 51's No More Heroes. Now, before I get to the actual game, it's important to understand the perspective from which this game was designed. Suda, a huge fan of American pop culture, developed No More Heroes specifically for a Western audience. Thanks to his being Japanese, however, it's more of an outsider-looking-in situation. The game's setting, Santa Destroy, is hardly your average Californian locale. I suppose it's only fitting, though, because Travis Touchdown is hardly your average hitman. The self-professed otaku and lucha libre aficionado, Travis's goals are simple. Smoke some fools and get some way hot tail. And when he drunkenly encounters Sylvia Crystal one night at a bar, she promises him both. After she gets him to fight the number 11 ranked assassin in the world, Helter Skelter, Travis finds himself battling his way through a variety of peculiar, deranged, and most of all, deadly warriors in his quest to reach number 1. And if he's actually able to get there, he gets to lay some serious pipe on Miss Crystal, as per their arrangement. The main storyline doesn't really get too interesting until you get to the last third of the game, but thankfully, the downright fucked upness of your opponents will keep you enthralled just fine. Essentially, No More Heroes, much like Suda51's last major console game, Killer 7, is all about the boss fights, and follow a very similar structure in how you'll actually access them. You'll face a horde of indistinguishable cronies through three rooms until you get to the main event. Travis's main method of attack is through his beam katana. Simply tilt the remote up or down to differentiate between high and low attacks, and press A to strike. Once you land enough blows, you'll see an arrow pop up prompting you to swipe the remote in a given direction, which acts as a finisher. Your unlucky foe will either end up split in half, right down the middle, or he'll be disembodied, with the splatter being composed just as much of coins as they are of blood. These coins are added up to your overall funds, as well as activating a slot machine. If you're able to get a certain lineup, dart traps will be unleashed. Time slows down, colors will be inverted, and your enemies will be vanquished in a single blow. It's pretty damn sweet. You'll also be able to charge A for a stronger slash and press B to throw kicks. If you see several birds flying over your opponent's head, you'll be able to press B again to activate a wrestling move, where you'll jerk the remote and nunchuck it in whatever direction the screen indicates. You'll find that as the game goes on, the combat becomes more and more complex. You can basically mash A blindly at the beginning, but the further in you get, the more you realize the importance of locking on via the Z button, dodges via the D-pad, and counters via sidestepping while locked on. By the time you get to the final boss, your skills will be tested to the absolute maximum. It's quite a sight to see. So you're probably wondering what you'll be doing in between those epic bouts of strength and skill, right? Well, Sandy Destroy is a pretty spacious town, and there's lots of ways to earn cash in between bosses and to the next ranked battle. Unfortunately, they're not exactly as glamorous as slashing a man in half to harvest his body for gold coins. Instead, you'll be starting out by doing odd jobs assigned to the local temp office. You might find yourself gathering coconuts for a vendor, picking up trash in the street, or gathering runaway kittens. Luckily, the jobs usually pay around $2,000 for each coconut slash soda can slash kitten. On a side note, I seriously need to move to Sandy Destroy. Once you complete an odd job, your shady employer will open up a minor assassination mission for you, which pays a whole lot more and is in general way more exciting. In addition to paying for your next rank, you'll also be able to spend cash on new sword upgrades at Dr. Naomi's shop, buy new threads, eat out at a restaurant, or train at Thunder Rio's gym to boost your stats. While these intermediary parts can be a bit tedious during the first few ranks, they'll get more fun and will pay much higher the further along you get. So, they're not too much of a detriment. Still, they definitely pale in comparison to the fast-paced action of the boss encounters, but hey, maybe you're weighing a kitten, so who knows how you'll feel about it. No More Heroes is a conundrum when it comes to presentation. The art style is fantastic, but being cel-shaded doesn't give you a license to seriously skimp on polygon count, textures, and frame rate, which can sometimes dip far below 30. This isn't a case of Wii being underpowered either, it seems that there just wasn't enough time or enough of a budget to give the visuals more attention. The city is large enough to get some serious exploration though, and there isn't ever a single load time when you're riding around. And what a ride you'll have, Travis basically has the motorcycle from Akita, which you'll use to commute from his shabby motel room. It controls a little loosely, but it's only vital in two missions, so I didn't have too much trouble with it. Sound-wise, there's a lot of like in No More Heroes. The voice acting is, for the most part, pretty great, and the soundtrack itself is an eclectic mix of techno, grunge, and of course, punk. Much like Killer 7, Grasshopper brings some serious skill in oral design. So is No More Heroes worth the cash? I clocked in at 10 hours after beating the final boss, playing on the harder difficulty, which isn't terribly long, but I also didn't spend a lot of time exploring the city, so I suppose you could probably lengthen that to 12 or 13 hours. While there definitely isn't a 50-hour quest, what's here is quality, and if you're willing to shell out 50 clams for it, you'll discover a lot to like among a little to dislike. And there you have it, folks. I'm done. Now back to Johnny and the crew.
Okay, we are back with, I guess this is segment 3, the community interaction part of the show. And we'll start with Jimmy Jones. What's happening in the forums, dog?
Okay. The first thing I want to talk about is the talkback thread, which is a thread that's created for people to respond to all the news postings if you're completely
Everyone should use this.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a pretty cool feature, actually. Even if
well, and this is also the part of the forums where the staff posts the most often, because we want to see what people respond to what we put up on the site.
Mm-hmm.
And the more negative responses you get, the more responses you'll get from staff.
Hell yeah.
Rebuttal.
That's cheat code right there, boys.
Up, up, down, down. Yeah, okay. So what was people back talking about?
All right, so there was a news story that came out, and I can't find the source because our news story didn't cover it. But basically it says that the iconic Dr. Kawashima, who lended his name and some of his research to the Brain Age series, hasn't pocketed any of the royalties from the games. No, and he also forbids his children from playing video games on weekdays. So it's sort of a non-story, but it was some of the things that he said, some of his quotes are really weird. And one of the better quotes is, "Everyone in my family is mad at me," he confesses, "but I tell them if they want the money, go out and earn it."
It's a hardcore supply side.
All right. That's a patriarch right there.
And my first thought was, well, now I see why he worked with Nintendo, because he is batshit crazy like the rest of their icons.
Isn't Bill Gates, like, not leaving shitloads of money to his children or something? Doesn't he want them to earn some money rather than inherit $30 billion or whatever?
He's still leaving them millions, but
not 15 billion, obviously, but, you know, yes. He's got to go out and earn the other 14.
It helps if you have that seed money to start
with. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Got to speculate to accumulate and all that.
So what did the forumers say about Dr. Kawashima's interesting philosophy here?
Well, one of the better quotes at the end of the article basically came down to him saying that people tend to die from what they study, and he anticipates he's going to die of some sort of horrible brain injury. Which sort of lent it to the mentality that the general responses were that, oh my god, this man is insane. But one of the responses came something along the lines of Wolfpack ITE said, quote, "I've seen far too many people who are pressured to study and be something big because it's what their parents want. It's a good way to develop anger and resentment." To which our esteemed forum goer Mario replied, "And serial killers."
Yeah.
A lot of the responses were, "I don't think I could survive growing up in Japan," or "This guy is hardcore," or the best one from Shy Guy, "So brain age isn't studying, or is brain age isn't fun?" Which one's true?
It's not studying, that's for sure. And sometimes it's not very fun either, but it can be.
That's the gist of that thread's responses. And the other one was more of a...
Wait, you missed Ian's.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, God. All right. Ian Sane, our forum cynic and stick in the mud, responded to the... "For a guy who's a brain doctor, he sure is a fucking moron."
Oh, good Lord.
"Take the money, you self-righteous prick. Nintendo's pocket."
Oh. That's how you really feel, Ian. That's how you really feel. Don't pull any punches, man.
"Nintendo's pocketing, so why not you? Why let them benefit from your likeness when you're just interested in the almighty yen? At the very least, I would consider my family my priority. If I could retire early, I would, instead of spending my time working. I could spend my time with my kids." It's sort of a frightening thought, him spending time with his kids. "Now, I wouldn't spoil them, but I would give them so many opportunities, and it would be nice to never have work get in the way." That's...
Okay, I don't agree with that. But what is Kawashima doing with the money? I mean, is he just telling Nintendo, just keep it? Is he basically donating it to the corporation, or is he, like, diverting it to some trust fund or something?
Well, the article originally didn't say that. But later, the person who wrote it came back and said something along the lines of, "The money is actually going to the institute he does his research in to help the institute grow."
So he's still using it selfishly, just in his professional life and not his family life.
Basically, yeah. He's giving it to the university in which he is faculty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
he's using it to fund more useless brain research on why doing algebra problems... makes the front part of your brain glow pink, right?
I think actually his center studies brain health in general, not just why matching dog to bark is good for the old people to stop going senile.
Good. Well, I'm glad his setting his sights a little higher than that.
Okay. And the other interesting, it's actually two threads, but I'll just cite the first one from Chozo Ghost in the console discussion, who asked a simple question. "How much of your Wii library is third-party?" Now, this is an issue because during the GameCube era and the N64 era, the attach rate for third-party titles was really, really low. People bought the console to buy the Nintendo games, and that was it. And so what people were doing in this thread is listing their first and third parties. And there's a lot of third parties here, actually. I was surprised at how many people owned. But I was also surprised at how much crap people owned.
These $20 games that probably their family members bought them.
No, no, no. These people bought them themselves.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was this all Chiron?
No.
He buys the worst games.
Chiron owns about 44 games, according to this list.
Christ.
For Wii?
Good.
For Wii.
Chiron buys stuff that you shouldn't even rent.
Exactly.
You shouldn't even look at on the shelf.
44 Wii games? That's got to be close to a world record.
Let me go find the exact number. No, wait, no. No, I'm wrong. He owns 53 Wii games.
No. Oh my god.
Jesus Christ on a bicycle.
And only, where does he put them all?
And only 8 of them are first party.
Wow. Oh dear.
In his collection is Soul
I'm
Calibur
stunned.
Legends, Mortal Kombat Armageddon,
even possible? Oh,
My Sims, MLB Power Pros, Manhunt 2, Alien Syndrome, Sea Monster, Knights.
See, I've never even heard of Sea Monster.
Ninja Bread Man.
Oh, Ninja Bread Man. Oh my god.
He went there.
The recently mentioned Heat Sinker, Super Swing Golf, and a bunch of other games that make me sad to listen. And in fact,
by the way, Chiron, part of the problem.
In fact, he mentions in the thread that he sold his first game ever, and it was a Wii title. Want to make any guesses on what game it was? It was so bad that he sold it.
Carnival Games?
No, he owns that game.
Yeah, of course he does.
Oh, God, yeah.
No, I've heard Carnival Games is pretty good compared to a lot of other similar
things. Is it Far Cry?
No. Oh. It was Boogie.
Oh, my God. That's
what?
That's
Boogie.
Boogie. Oh, yeah.
But he has competition.
Have you guys ever seen the YouTube video of a 2-year-old getting a gold medal on Boogie?
No, I don't find it.
She's just doing the karaoke without the dancing, and she's holding the microphone going, yeah, you know, like baby talk, and she gets a gold medal.
Nice.
Oh my God.
That's a good affirmation for the child. It'll grow up feeling a lot better about itself now.
Yeah.
Until
it just shows you how broken that game is. It just plain doesn't work correctly, you know.
But he has competition from our resident female member, Golden Phoenix. I say resident.
Are we sure that Golden Phoenix is female?
No, but we're going to go with that anyway.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's part of
I was under the impression that that was a joke.
That's not what the MySpace says, so we're going to hold to that.
You checked MySpace.
I don't. Well, I'm not.
Do you have a special interest in this forum user?
No. No, trust me. I usually get trolled by her.
Oh, okay.
Which is not fair. I'm supposed to be doing the trolling. But she actually has a higher collection of crap than Chiron does.
Oh my god.
She has in her collection the Godzilla game, Knights, Carnival Games, that first Rayman game, Power Pro Baseball, Smarty Pants.
See, wait. These are all like 7.0-ish games. These aren't. These are not the crap of the crap.
I'm going down. Hold on.
Right. Okay.
I can just jump straight to the end. Yeah, Bug Island. Nice. Cruisin'.
Oh, there you go.
She has Cruisin'.
That's the jackpot. Right.
She has Cruisin', Ghost Squad.
Well, that's not that bad like, right here.
Well... It's
not
still a point
it's not
of
Target Terror, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Note to Konami, run ads for Target Terror on our website because apparently our readers are way into this stuff. Like
they want it. Yeah.
I don't get it. Are they collecting this stuff out of some kind of morbid curiosity or what?
I almost bought Cruisin' for that reason, but there was actually a lot of people who have 50-50 collections of third party and first party, which is much higher than I expected.
Yeah, but they are obviously some sort of bizarre masochists that like inflicting awful games on themselves, or at least a shit ton of mediocrity.
I would personally.
I think the ones I have are Trauma Center, Second Opinion,
got it,
and Geometry Wars Galaxies, and now No More Heroes. And I think those are the only. Oh, and Guitar Hero 3.
Yeah.
So that's 4. That's about half my collection. I probably only have 8 or 9 Wii.
Yeah,
games.
I'm just at Geometry Wars. That's it.
Yeah, I got I got Trauma Center, Super Monkey Ball, Banana Blitz. I think I have Battalion Wars. Is that first party or third party?
First.
Yeah, and then I got Excite Truck. Is that first or third?
First.
That's first.
Okay.
I've got that. Yeah. and Resident Evil 4.
A little upsetting that you can't tell.
Well, I just forget.
You can tell because you own
in
them.
Ages and ages and ages. I'm just looking at their spines. That's why I can't tell.
Yeah,
offhand.
It's hard to tell from the spine.
But yeah, but basically Resident Evil 4, Trauma Center, and Super Monkey Ball.
Oh, I've got that one too. So I have 5.
Wow.
That's like that's more than half my collection probably.
Yeah, but it is a fairly sort of elite group relatively, isn't it?
Yeah.
By comparison.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I have pretty much all of the best third-party games.
Let's see. That's basic. There's actually a lot of people who owned a lot of games. Example, the last week's mentioned Brandog has 41.
Wow.
Wii games?
Wow. Yes.
But that's still shocking
to me.
Oh, my
God.
They're not that cheap. That's
including,
the first thing I'm thinking.
Including Pool Party?
Yeah, but probably for the box art, though, in that case, wasn't it?
Box.
I mean, that was breathtaking. That was just a couple of befuddled models.
What's on the box of it?
It's literally just a few people in front of a pool table. They just took just a crappy photo shoot of some people around the pool. Just so you wouldn't think it was some sort of bizarre swimming pool simulation.
Oh man! Okay, you know that this is all I can handle of the bad third-party stuff. So let's move on to reader mail. You know, we've been asking consistently for more reader mail, and we got a lot of it last week. A lot of it was really interesting stuff, and I thank everybody for sending that. So we want to go through as much of this as we can. And I want to start off from a request we got from Saturn. This was actually a couple of weeks ago. Saturn told us that he has a girl coming to stay with him in February, which is, let me tell you, this event is lighting up the forums all over the gaming industry. And Saturn wanted us to wish this girl a happy Valentine's Day on one of our shows ahead of Valentine's Day. And since you never know exactly when the editing will finish up, I thought we'd better do it this week instead of next. So, Abby, message from Kevin, happy Valentine's Day. And by the way, to all our other listeners, we're never doing this again, so
yeah.
You missed out.
No.
Saturn was the first to ask, and as my personal message to Abby, please take good care of him. Don't let him talk to you about computer power supplies all day, and don't let him spend all his time writing emails to us while you're staying with him.
Yes, he must be a very sensitive man. That he's so interested in what everyone else thinks. That should work.
Yeah.
Oh, now okay. He's never going to write us another letter again. Thanks, guys.
No, I'm actually, my message to Kevin is, good luck.
Wink, wink, oh, nudge, nudge.
Does anybody have, like, a good Star Fox
That was very much, I immediately thought of Pepper, actually, so you must have done something.
Good, okay.
Good luck.
I'm just going to edit that in over somebody.
Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day, Abby, from Kevin. Will you marry him?
You just stepped over the line.
Yeah, sorry. No, I added that part in. Sorry. He didn't ask that part. He should have. Okay. So, on to our other ones. Andy asks, do you think Nintendo succeeded in creating the revolution needed to keep the industry from going stale? So that was the idea of the Wii, right, is that it's going to basically revive the gaming industry, especially in Japan where it was really slowing down. Mm. Andy thinks no, and here's why. Number one, Nintendo hasn't really done anything all that revolutionary with the Wii Remote. Number two, the Wii Remote does not work as well as Nintendo wants us to believe.
Uh-oh.
Number three, Nintendo can't seem to decide if it wants the Wii to be a gaming machine or a multimedia platform. Mm. And number four, Nintendo seems content with delivering less traditional game content and more non-game content, and Andy is worried that people cite this example of Mario, Metroid, Zelda, and Smash Brothers all coming out in a fairly short period of time as proof that Nintendo does still care about traditional gamers. But Andy makes the point, and this is true, that all of those games were in development before the Wii was launched and became successful with the casual market.
Yeah.
And he's afraid that basically everything going into development now and coming out, say, end of 2008, 2009, is going to show a really marked shift towards the casual stuff, because that's clearly where the market is for Wii. And so Nintendo is basically going to phase out these big marquee titles for so-called hardcore gamers.
But then we're sort of rolling into the discussion of is Phantom Hourglass developed for us or developed for the Brain Age Collective? And I think maybe it was developed in an extent for the people who don't play the franchise, you know, who haven't had experience with adventure games. But I don't think anybody here is going to say that that game wasn't fun. Now, some of us are going to claim that it's overrated, but they're not going to say that it wasn't a fun game.
I think they tried to hit both markets with that game.
It seemed like the primary intent was just to sell more copies in Japan, because Minish Cap did quite badly in Japan, as I recall. And the Zelda series in general.
Minish Cap's not that great.
But I mean, the point is, GameCube, you know, with Wind Waker, you know, GameCube as a platform had its problems. The GBA didn't. So, in terms of the atrophy of Zelda sales, you could look at that and say that's the franchise, the name, isn't selling it on its own anymore. And it seemed like that Phantom Hourglass was their response to that, because by making it stylus-driven, they essentially branded it as very much a sort of part, you know, akin to the system itself. You know, this isn't a Super Nintendo game or a GBA game on DS. This is a DS game, and people love the DS itself. You know, the interface and things. So they wanted to kind of create this synergy between Zelda and that platform, and hopefully the popularity of the system would kind of rub off on the popularity of the franchise. And there's some evidence that that worked. But I mean, take something as thoroughly traditional as New Super Mario Brothers. It outsold it hugely. So I'm not sure that they really achieved what they wanted to there, but in terms of...
I think...
Go on, Johnny.
Well, I think what Andy is worried about, and I'm really glad that you brought up Phantom Hourglass, because I think what you're going to find is that as we go forward with Wii games, all the games that were basically started after the launch of the Wii, after the runaway success of the Wii, are going to be more in the vein of Phantom Hourglass, because Nintendo particularly wants to sell the Wii to Japanese gamers, and that has... Japanese people, period. And the Wii has slowed down a little bit, and some of the Wii games, other than Wii Fit, you know, especially including Super Mario Galaxy, have not sold as well as they had hoped. And I think when Nintendo fans are really going to start biting their nails over this kind of issue, and it you know, people talk about it, it keeps coming up, but when it's really going to come to the forefront is when Nintendo starts giving the Phantom Hourglass treatment to Mario, Metroid, and Zelda.
Again,
and that will happen. In the next 2 years, we're going to see new Wii games in those franchises, and I think we're going to find that they are much more in that middle space between the hardcore and the casual. They're going to be more like Phantom Hourglass, and when Nintendo makes a Mario game that's controlled entirely with motion controls and the pointer, people are going to freak out.
Yeah, I would.
And I'm not saying that is in development. I have no idea. Yeah. But they could totally do it. I mean, look what they did with Zelda on DS.
Well, that is totally within
the realm of what they're capable of
one
doing.
One thing that's interesting, one of the later commercials in Japan for Galaxy was basically a side-by-side that told people that this is actually quite a lot like New Super Mario Brothers. Like, they juxtaposed stomping a Goomba in Galaxy.
It's not at all.
Well, exactly. But it's like, wait a minute. New Super Mario Brothers sold 5 million copies. This can't even make it to 900,000. Why don't we just let them know that actually it's you know, somewhat similar? Because, look, you stomp a Goomba in 3D, you stomp it in 2D in New Super Mario's. You've got a big, giant eel in, you know, one of the water levels of Galaxy. You've got an eel in one of the water levels of New Super Mario Brothers. That, to me, was incredible. That they marketed it that way in Japan, because of...
Well, maybe it worked because the sales went up.
Well, no, look, the sales went up the exact same day Wii Fit came out. Those two happened together. Retailers were selling Wii Fit, and they were saying, "Hey, you know, there's something else you can play on your Wii. Here it is." And I think that's what Nintendo needs to keep in mind. They need to make the retailers their allies, like they were during the Super NES era. And not their enemies like they were during the N64 and GameCube era.
Or their bitches like they were during the NES era.
Well, they don't want that either.
Just accept it, yeah. Take it.
See, that just sort of like built the resentment that led to the complete and total abandonment of the N64 and to a much greater extent the GameCube, where all your games were kind of in the children's clothes section of Target.
Nice.
Okay, I think Andy brings up not only this point about the hardcore games possibly going away as we get deeper into the Wii cycle, but these other elements, like the fact that they are positioning Wii as more of a multimedia machine with all these channels. You know, you've got the photo channel and the shop channel and not so much that one, but Check Me Out and the Me channel, stuff like that. I think he has a very good point, and I remember being very shocked, you know, we didn't find out about some of these channels until very close to when the Wii launched in the US. And I remember being pretty shocked that Nintendo was including this kind of stuff in the system, because it goes so much against their old philosophy of our consoles are for the games. You know, yeah. they always accused PS2 and Xbox of putting in all these multimedia features that people don't care about, and it sort of confuses the issue. And Nintendo is like, we're about games. GameCube only does games. Now they get to Wii and they're like, we'd like to put movie playback in a future version of it, and we're going to give you all this other stuff.
That's not coming.
It seems strange, doesn't it?
Although it doesn't even play CDs in its current form, so it's kind of annoying. We need to call it a multimedia platform and can't even do that.
Go ahead.
With the channels issue, I feel it's a way of, I think, again, as most things are with Nintendo, it's primarily driven by this sort of quest to sort of save console gaming in Japan. It's trying to legitimize gaming in a way. It's trying to associate the Wii with more adult things like the news and weather, that kind of mundane kind of stuff. But it's like, you know, and that people, so it's like a reduced form kind of multimedia thing for people that are not necessarily that tech savvy, but that, and it's in a sort of quite adult and no frills kind of way that really, I think it's not so much about the functionality itself, but how they want to position the Wii as a device in your home. And they want to position,
and it seems to be kind of working. I mean, that, you know, Wii gamers make fun of a lot of this stuff, like everybody votes. But there are a lot of people who actually go vote, like practically every single day.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, no, I think there are. There are people who are way into that, dude. There are people who actually watch Deal or No Deal.
Okay? I still think everybody votes as part of this great, massive, forged Nintendo online system.
Well, I can tell you, nobody votes. My girlfriend and I, every time I fire up the Wii, the first thing we do is we say, hey, you want to vote? Just for kicks. It takes you 5 minutes. It's easy. It's brainless entertainment. You just turn it on, vote, out of there.
You're just patronizing her, aren't you, Joanne?
It's brainless. You can do it, woman.
Right on Valentine's Day. But I mean, I think that there's people out there that, you know, I mean, not so much, obviously, a hardcore gamer wouldn't really use the voting thing too much, but it's the kind of thing where somebody who isn't necessarily interested in gaming, per se, you can say, hey, look at this. Come over here. It asks some funny question, and we can vote on it. And it's just something very simple that, you know, people that don't game a lot can get into.
Yeah, and I guess the idea is...
What about this?
Go on.
Let's move on real quick. I don't want to spend too long on this one question. Andy does have I know we already have. But Andy does bring up a lot of interesting points. He's saying Nintendo hasn't done anything all that revolutionary with the Wii Remote, and the Wii Remote doesn't really do exactly what you might think it does from watching the commercials. Like, it's not as accurate. It doesn't pick up every single motion that you make. And it really depends a lot on the way the game is programmed. I mean, what do you guys have to say about that?
He's right.
Yeah, though I would say this is a great deal of validity to those. I mean, because most of the success stories with the Wii Remote so far are kind of modifying existing designs, like Metroid Prime 3 is modifying
Mario Galaxy.
Metroid Prime 3 is modifying the existing Metroid Prime design or the standard, you know, FPS twin stick design, and it's.
I'm with you on those examples, but. Here's the big problem with this point that Andy makes. The one thing that Nintendo has done to revolutionize gaming with the Wii Remote that has totally worked and really could not be done on anything else is Wii Sports. I mean, the motion controls in Wii Sports are better than almost anything else on the Wii. Even stuff that Nintendo has made themselves.
Which is not going to give...
There's nothing fancy about the way Mario uses motion controls.
No, not at all.
That's probably the way it should be. That's the way it should be because it just doesn't lend itself to that kind of control.
Yeah, it's just a modifier.
But I think it's shocking that over a year after it's come out, Wii Sports really is still the best use of the Wii
Remote. The biggest problem seems to be that people have been very reticent to actually try and do stuff that isn't just gesture to button mapping.
Well, I think it's because it's very difficult.
Yeah, well, but
I think it's surprisingly difficult to program.
I imagine it would be. It must be really because you'd think there was too much to be had in terms of, you know, buzz and ultimately sales if you could pull something off that does some of the things that Wii Sports does. Obviously, most sort of notably, I guess, in the bowling where, you know, it doesn't. it isn't anything you can approximate with buttons, really. You know, it's got this kind of analog dimension to it that you know, it really is something that is a break from what can be approximated with buttons, and you would like to see that extended to more games rather than, you know, what we've had is, you know, Mario doing a spin attack, which is, you know, you could have had with a button. You know, obviously all the stuff in Twilight Princess is very much like that, and many other games.
Yeah,
besides.
I think that the big difference is that so many Wii games reduce functions to a gesture, whereas Wii Sports actually uses the motion control to expand what you can do. There are swings in tennis part of Wii Sports that you can't do in any other tennis game. And that's allowed by the way that you can move the control, because it picks up so many hundreds of different distinct motions in that game. There's really nothing else. There's no way to replicate that on a normal controller. And so many Wii games, including those that Nintendo's releasing themselves, are basically things that you could do on a normal controller, and maybe they're slightly more comfortable, or they're just more gimmicky and more interesting on the Wii Remote. But they're not really doing things that you can't do on other systems.
I think it's more likely it's more likely just a time issue. I mean, developers are finding out that, you know, actually making tweaking something to work well takes a lot of R&D. So they're probably just like, well, you know, we could just go the route of just, you know, making this
shovelware,
just making it work like it does on a GameCube controller, except you just shake the Wii Remote instead of hitting a button.
Yeah, and the port culture is a big problem as well. Because it's so easy to just port something from a PSP game these days, or, you know, an old PS2 game and so forth. That it's easier and probably more profitable, at least certainly in a sort of, you know, certainty kind of way, that to just go that route rather than putting that time into R&D and getting results.
Well, you know, I think the biggest damning factor in this is that it was over a year ago that Wii Sports came out, and nothing like that's happened since then. And the fact that nothing like it has happened since then is sort of a troubling thought, really.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay, let's move on to the next question. Somebody else want to read this one? Someone? Please.
Someone named John, possibly.
John, where am I? Hey, yeah. John, go, hurt. Fleece. Where are we? Fleece's question.
Next question, okay. Man.
Friend codes are more of an annoyance.
Wake
here,
up,
man. I just wasn't looking at the text. Friend codes are more of an annoyance than a convenience, especially since Nintendo never set up an official place to trade codes, leaving it up to communities in every pocket of the web.
Didn't they actually take down their official forums right around the time that we came out?
No, about a year later. But yeah.
Yeah.
A year later?
Yeah.
Okay.
They gave us just enough time to see it, and then they're like, ha-ha, it's gone.
Yeah. Fleece also goes on to say, also, you have talked way too much about PictoChat. Don't tell me you actually use that crap. I would gladly replace that with the Opera browser built into an updated DS, but since there's that Brawl stage, I guess that won't really happen. Does anyone really use PictoChat?
Apparently,
ooh,
you
I find
do.
The verbiage here very interesting. Use? PictoChat is not a tool. I mean, you're comparing PictoChat to Opera is really missing the point of PictoChat. It's not a productivity tool.
But that Opera
it's not
browser is
something useful.
But isn't that Opera browser also terrible? I seem to recall somebody trying to post a news story to the site when they were testing it at E3.
It's very slow.
Oh, was it? Yes.
Very slow.
It's really, really slow. It's cool, but it's not useful because it's so slow. But PictoChat is not a tool, okay? It's a game. And I understand why people don't appreciate PictoChat, because if you don't know a lot of people who have DSs and you never get in a group and all bust out your DSs, and because that's a really nerdy thing to do,
and draw wangs on
then
everything,
you're not gonna realize the amazing potential of PictoChat. Yeah, it's a game. It is a game. It's like basically Mario Paint, but
I mean,
communal.
I've only had two occasions in my lifetime in which I've actually been able to use PictoChat to its full potential, and it just never happens. You just never have enough people around you with DSs, at least I don't, you know, to ever use it.
What I'm saying is, if you do get such an opportunity, you have to do it. It is some of the most fun you'll ever have with games, and it's with PictoChat. It really is. I mean, some of my greatest memories of, you know, I went to 7 E3s, and some of my greatest memories of those 7 E3s we're playing PictoChat with these perverted bastards on our website. I'm telling you, if you haven't done it, you really should try. Just round up your friends, do whatever. You know, it's really fun actually if you go to a movie theater and you're sitting around waiting for Star Wars Episode II to start.
Oh boy!
And you're doing it if you're kind of in a caravan of cars going through downtown LA and you're trying to maintain a wireless connection from one car to the one behind it, which works. It's really cool actually if you
unless you're the driver.
It seems like duh. Obviously that would work because they're close together in traffic. But to actually be talking to someone on your DS who's in a different vehicle on the highway is so cool. And then you're drawing these giant penises, and, you know, it just is incredibly fun.
It all comes down to the penises for Johnny.
Oh, come on.
Well, and it's actually, there are other things, but I'm less comfortable talking about certain other things, because I don't have
it. It's just backward induction, though, isn't it? Everyone knows it's going to end up in the penis, so just go right to it.
If I start with one, they can't draw another one.
Exactly.
On it,
just like, let's just cut to the chase.
Yeah.
We all know this.
The best part was Ryan Jones, our staff artist. You know, he would spend 5 or 10 minutes drawing something really elaborate, like this amazing picture of Luigi, and then 30 seconds later, it would be completely defaced, you know. And it's like putting the mustache on Mona Lisa, except to the nth degree.
Except the mustache is a wang.
Yeah. It's a different kind of mustache, let's put it that way.
I do like the fact the letter started with, you guys really talk about PictoChat too much, and we've actually gone on.
Yeah, well, come
on.
If ever there was an invitation to just, you know, completely
ramble on. He's already closed the podcast by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Fleece. That was a fun topic to bring up. Greg, please read the next one.
Okay. Ryan says, Brawl is still going to be a fantastic game, but these weak ass secret characters took a lot of the excitement out of the game for me. Which I'm sure he's seen of the 35 that have been revealed through various outlets and the forums and whatnot. And, you know, I can kind of see the point. I mean, one of the problems is putting so many of these secret characters are ones that we all knew were going to be in it. Like Captain Falcon, Luigi, Ness.
Yeah, what's the point of making all these returning
Jigglypuff
characters secret?
Well, as I've said before, it's just because this vestigial attachment to the fact they were originally secret characters in the N64 one. And so for some reason...
That's such a weak reason.
For some reason... Though, well, it's not. But that's the only reason I can... That's the only rationalization one can attach to it. Because it really isn't.
No, it is weak.
It's extremely weak.
I think a good way to explain it is they spent time hyping up these new characters that are going to be in there, and they wanted to make them available from the start. But that meant either they had to add more characters or they would just have to make old ones unlockable.
Yeah.
And I think in the end they were like, well, let's just make all ones unlockable because I don't want to have to go through the 7.5 years of negotiating with Capcom to get Mega Man in there.
Yeah, that's really a shame that didn't happen.
The one thing I really wanted was a Belmont or someone from Castlevania, because what they could have done with the music then would have been just brilliant. You know?
Yeah,
that's true. But, you know, they already did Snake from
When he was unveiled, that's what got my hopes up. It's like, well, Konami are involved, so... You know, and that was when the game was first unveiled. So
I
had my hopes.
That'd be great.
Yeah, some
Alucard would be great. Oh man, well, I actually agree with Ryan. I still am really excited for Brawl, but my excitement has actually gone down a little bit because these things were spoiled for me. You know, I knew the whole time I wasn't going to be like avoiding spoilers. I don't think you can have spoilers in a fighting game, but the quality of the secret characters is kind of lame.
And one big shock, though, isn't there? Is that you've got clones, which, well, they're not, I don't know if they're as much clones as the old clones were, but they're very clone-ish.
There are three characters with the same final smash.
Yes, and that is the real shocker, is
Landmaster
Fox.
Tank.
That's horrific.
The Fox
issue that's so lazy.
Is incredible. That, to me, was shocking. That you would have three, you know, charitably variants on the same character, and obviously, the Landmaster, which is now... there's some of the stuff I've seen on forums, on our own forums, on Gaff and stuff, taking the mick out of the Landmaster is priceless. Like, you know, Young Link's final smash confirmed, which is just the Landmaster with green little bits on it instead of blue.
Well, you know, if you want to make this really, really horribly nerdy, you could ask, why does Star Wolf have access to a Landmaster tank?
Oh, it's backwards engineered.
Let's not go there, James.
Oh.
Don't do that. Don't do that, dude. But
like you have room to talk.
Yeah, no, I have to say, I mean, I'm super pleased with the newcomers for the game, okay? The new Pokemon secret character is really cool. I'm so happy about Pokemon Trainer and Olimar and Sonic and Snake. All these guys I'm really excited about. But the secret characters in general, these clones, it just seems so lazy, and it's shocking to have them revealed, and it's so anticlimactic when you find out, oh my god, they needed another Star Fox character who's exactly the same as Fox.
But we still don't get
again.
Any of the Metroid characters at all.
Well, there really aren't any characters in Metroid. There's like three characters in the entire franchise.
Well, that's not true, though, because I think Metroid Prime Hunters and then Metroid Prime 3... Metroid Prime 3.
I'm glad they avoided
the
other
that,
bounty
but they could
hunters.
They could
really
come up with something, I'm sure. It worked something.
It seems like it. But even beside that, the way that they have brought over these characters like Luigi and Ganondorf without any major changes, you know, Luigi still doesn't have the vacuum, Ganondorf still doesn't use his sword. It's like, come on, guys. I mean, it feels like they basically threw that in there to satisfy, like, the old fans, just like, thank God Martha's in the game. Yes. But they didn't actually do anything new to him, and so it's just weak, you know? It's just kind of boring to me. It's like they're more concerned with not upsetting the tournament players by tweaking these favorite characters. And to me, it's much less interesting for that, you know? I wish they had changed these.
In the case of the Ganon, I honestly wanted them to use the Wind Waker Ganon and then every level his opening animation be a 5-minute monologue about how the fate of the world is dark and how the gods are evil.
Anything about the wind.
Well, they did use the Wind Waker Ganon, basically. Well, no, that it's Twilight Princess,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
With his voice work, which I don't like. I really dislike the Twilight Princess voice work.
But, you know, they've got Wind Waker Link, and he has the same moves as normal Link.
Yeah. Except they're small and cute.
So it's basically a palette swap. It's just, that's so boring. And that character, a lot of these characters have so much potential, and yet they're clones in every sense of the word. Their moves are basically exactly the same, and it's just, that's such a missed opportunity to me. These are such cool characters, and they just haven't done enough with them. So, in that sense, I am disappointed. My hype has gone down a little bit for Brawl, but everything else, aside from the characters, basically, I'm just trying not to think about the characters right now, the secret characters. Other than that, I think everything in the game is still
stages and
amazing.
Music, I've been really impressed with.
Those are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I wish...
Okay, James, close us out with the final question, and then we can end this really, really long podcast.
Really, really long, yes. All right, Rusty asks, I've noticed recently that the British pronounce Mario with a long A. Mario.
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 Kind of like Cheerio. Mario.
Mario.
That's horrible.
Cheerio.
And he was wondering, quote, what's up with that? I figured since you now have a bona fide Englishman on the podcast, maybe he could shed some light on this topic.
As opposed to all the fake Englishmen that we've had in the past.
Exactly.
It's basically that's how we say Mario. I don't really know how to explain it any other than that. Would you care to explain how any of you pronounce words?
I don't know what that's
correctly.
Scottish there.
Yes.
Bringing out the Canadian stuff. You also have to say the F word every other sentence.
Oh, really? I didn't know that was particularly fucking Canadian. What?
What part of Canada are you from? My friend from Toronto says every time he goes home, he just starts.
No,
cussing,
I
like,
don't,
say.
But I just start saying A a little bit. And if you're wondering where I'm from London, yeah. Ontario, which is actually between Toronto and Detroit, so it's sort of that. It's the same Toronto-ish area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
London.
Okay. London.
But I don't think the English are the only people that say Mario. There are places in America that say Mario, just from sports talk radio, you know, people like Mario Williams, the defensive end for the Houston Texans, or Mario Lemieux, a great
And we're back to the NFL.
I just mentioned hockey. What do you want?
I appreciate it, Greg.
We actually mentioned hockey earlier, too.
The point is, it's not just a British thing, so I don't understand why this is so novel.
It's not novel, it's incorrect, and all you have to know to be sure is listen to Lou Albano.
Ah, there you go.
The song says do the Mario, okay?
Well, Pete says Mario.
The movie says Mario. Mario, Mario, and Luigi,
yep,
Mario.
Indeed it does, and I always regard
And you
got
after me
canon.
For the Star Wolf having a landmaster.
That movie is canon as hell, dude.
Everyone knows Goombas are giant brick shithouses. Tiny little house.
That's right. And Peach is really hot, and Yoshi is super cute but kind of scary because he could probably bite your hand off. Mm.
Oh, dear. What a way to end the podcast.
Mario, yeah. Mario, hey. It all sounds like fun to me. No matter how you say it, it all sounds like fun to me.
Oh, God, that's so corny. Are you riding a surfboard as you say that?
Into the sunset.
Oh, man. Okay, into the sunset indeed. That's the end of our really long show. Hey, we had 4.5 mm-hmm. people on this one. I mean,
Quindy is half a man.
Okay, so that's it.
Oh, dear.
He was on half the show. By the way, before I get into the overtures or whatever you call it, the epilogue of the show where I give you the email address and shit, let me just say, I want to give a big shout-out to James Jones. The man edits these podcasts, and these are so long and complicated, and it takes him a long time to do it. So let's give the man some love. Okay?
Thank you.
James. Incredible. Incredible work, sir.
Thank you.
I don't envy your job.
Not this week.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Obviously, we got some great reader mail. We'd love to get some more. Give us some ideas to argue about. You know, we want to get some more arguments on the show because you guys like that. So send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review. We love to see that. We do check it. And check out the article. I'll have a link to my eBay auction, maybe.
Oh.
Okay. That's the end of the show. Thanks for coming, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Mr. T says, go to school.